baby gates, corner cushions, socket covers, and that fancy car seat for big girls like me. Where'd you find that thing?
The odds of a child being in a fatal car accident are 1 in 23,000. Highly unlikely, but it's still worth untangling those buckles time after time. Well, there's something out there that untangling buckles won't protect a child from, and that something is autism. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism are 1 in 166. That's right. 1 in 166 children will be diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder, and one of those could be your child. Knowing what to look for and catching it early could make a world of difference to your child and you.
So, Mom, while you're remembering to protect me from the unthinkable, don't dismiss the possible.
To learn the signs of autism and what to do, go to AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Meet the faces of influenza, groups who should be immunized against influenza every year.
He's in the group 6 months to 5 years old.
I'm 4.5 years old.
Pregnant during influenza season.
We live with a baby under 6 months old.
I live with someone at risk.
Live with someone at risk.
I care for someone at risk.
I have a chronic medical condition.
Diabetes. Asthma.
I have COPD, a serious lung disease.
I'm 50.
I'm over 50 years old.
Way over 50.
Do you see your family or yourself here? As one of the many faces of influenza, you and I and those close to us need to get vaccinated. Each year, about 36,000 Americans die from influenza and its complications. So see your health care provider about influenza immunization. Get immunized. Vaccination is a safe and effective way to prevent influenza. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza isn't the common cold. It's serious.
The Illinois Department of Revenue is making life less taxing with electronic filing.
There are three ways to e-file, and all are safe, fast, and accurate.
You can file online at tax.illinois.gov.
Math mistakes are corrected automatically.
And you can have your refund deposited right into your bank account in about a week, or pay electronically if you owe taxes.
You can also easily e-file your state income taxes through a tax professional or by using tax preparation software.
Make life less taxing and electronically file your taxes today.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell my brothers, tell my sisters. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell my brothers, tell my sisters.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Revolution in the air. Tell my brothers, stop resisting.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty,
disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Has the church failed Black America? Don't miss today's Sloan Ranger Show on WGNU. Dr. Steve Cole explores that question tonight at 5:15 with Lloyd Sloan. That's the Sloan Ranger with Lloyd Sloan, 5 till 7 weeknights on AM 920 WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Understand. This is for all of my ancestors who were raped, who were killed, and hung because of their plight for freedom and for dignity. They died for me, and they died for you. This is for them to know that, yes, we are still fired up, and we're still talking about revolution.
Dear brother, when you go home, here's what I want you to do. We must belong to some organization that is working for and in the interest of the uplift and the liberation. Revolutionary Party. Join us. Join the Nation of Islam. Join Bush. Join the Congress of Racial Equality. Join SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But we must become a totally organized people. And the only way we can do that is to become a part of some organization that is working for the uplift of our people. We must keep the local organizing committees that made this event possible. We must keep them together. Go back and join the local organizing committee. And then all of us as leaders must stay together and make the National African American Leadership Summit inclusive of all of us. Now, many of the people that's in this house right here are put there by the margin of the black vote. So in the next election, we want to see who in here do we want to stay? And who in here do we want to go? And we want to show them that never again will they ever disrespect the black community. We must make them afraid to do evil to us and think they can get away with it. We must be prepared to help them if they're with us, or to punish them if they're against us. And when they're against us, I'm not talking about color. I'm talking about an agenda that's in the best interest of the black, the poor, and the vulnerable in this society.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. My toll-free long distance is 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get up, get to me. My goodness gracious, we have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, huh? I just want to say yesterday was a great day. A great day. I want to come home for a minute, though. I want to talk about who it wasn't a great day for. I got to look at this government, this place that we live, these decisions that are being made, and I got to look at them in terms of keeping the great day assessment going. Because as great of a day as it was yesterday, it's been a rough road to hoe, a rough road to travel. It's been hard for this administration. It's so hard. I just want you to know. Let me hear from the choir. How hard is it? Let me just let you know how hard it is for Boy George. It makes more sense to Boy George at this point in his life to go to Central America. Who's in Central America? Can you say Hugo Chavez? Can you say angry Bolivians? Can you say an entire, we're talking about Guatemala? We're talking about Central America that is mad as H-E double toothpicks at this administration, and they ain't taking it anymore. So it makes sense to Boy George to go to Central America. Now, understand, He's making a tour in Central America, and I'm not talking about an Eva Perón type of tour where people are going to come out in the streets and throw flowers at his feet. No, 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 no. You have it twisted. Boy George is going to Central America, and he's not giving a single speech. Huh? A Central American tour, not just one country, not just two countries, not just three countries, but four different countries and not a single speech. What the hey? What the hockey puck? What? And the reason he's not giving any tours is because if he goes out to talk anywhere in any of those countries at any time, there will be thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in the street to say, shut up and get out my country. I'm just trying to keep it real. So why would Boy George put himself in a position where there's only going to be the press out there of, well, why are you not giving any speeches? What are you here for? He'd rather have that press than the press of, oh, I don't know. What happened at Walter Reed and the hearings that are going on in Capitol Hill? Oh, I don't know. U.S. generals coming out and saying, we don't need any more troops in Iraq. Ouch, that's got to hurt. He would rather not have to talk to the American press about, so, Mr. President, you going to pardon Scooter Libby? Doesn't want to talk about that. He won't talk about the fact that he has put U.S. forces in Kosovo. And that his Defense Department is talking about a proposal to downgrade the combat status of U.S. forces who are part of NATO. Sounds good, right? Does that mean they're coming out of NATO? No, that means that they're going to be paid less to be. I'm sorry, are they coming out of Kosovo? No, that means that they're going to be paid less to be in Kosovo. 1,500 soldiers will lose hundreds or even thousands of dollars each month in tax benefits and combat pay. So, poor George doesn't want to have to talk about any of that. He would rather go to Central America, where Hugo Chavez right now is saying everybody needs to go find where he is and protest the heck up out of him. And, I am not a travel planner. I'm not a travel planner yet, anyway. But it seems to me that the Boy George tour guide should have considered sending him back to Mongolia. Outer Mongolia, where he went to hide a few months ago when things got hot before the Democratic majority. It's tough to be Boy George. No. It's hard to be Boy George. He's in Central America rather than here. You know what? In my kind little heart, I understand, baby. Understand. You'd rather take on Hugo Chavez because, in all fairness, you don't understand what they're telling you because they speak another language, so. I understand. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I'll be back.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for the 6 o'clock hour. Westbound 5570 at the 64 split in the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for stop traffic due to an accident. Two lanes are blocked. It's just before the entrance to westbound 70. It's the two right lanes, so avoid that if at all possible. And because of that, you have stop-and-go traffic on the King Bridge from the 5570 split all the way into the landing. Northbound Route 3, that ramp is stop and go from Monsanto into the 5570, into the Poplar Street Bridge. Northbound 270, but approaching 44 all the way to the Doherty Ferry. Look for stop and go traffic due to an accident. Shoulders blocked. It's at Doherty Ferry. Westbound 64 from 25th into the 5570 merge. You've got stop-and-go traffic due to that accident that's on the Poplar Street Bridge, so expect long delays this morning. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from Mason Road through back through Maryville Center, and then again from Spady through McKnight, look for some delays. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry and the Graham Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill into 270, look for some delays. And heavy volume eastbound 44 from Soccer Park on the 270. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny skies, high in the lower 50s this evening, partly cloudy with a low around 40. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day, chance of showers in the afternoon with a high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, another chance for showers with a low in the mid-40s. And Saturday, mostly cloudy in the morning, chance for showers in the morning and partly sunny throughout the day with a high in the upper 50s. Currently, we've got 26 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 28 and clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Get a free Razor cell phone delivered free to your door. Don't want a free Razor? Then go to letstalk17.com and choose from hundreds of other free phones. Join 500,000 users who found the smartest way to buy their cell phones. Never pay retail again. At letstalk17.com, you can compare prices on phones and service plans from all the major carriers. Find the coolest new phone at the coolest price. Find the best current special offers. Read what folks have to say about their phones and plans. They actually rate and review their phones and service plans so you know which ones to pick. Do it all in the comfort of your own home. If your plan is ending, now's your chance. Try your new phone risk-free for 7 days with free 48-hour shipping. Letstalk17.com is the only way to get the absolute best deal possible. Right now, get a free Razor after $50 mail-in rebate. This is an exclusive online offer at letstalk17.com. New 2-year service plan agreement required. One-time wireless activation and early termination fees may apply. Go to letstalk17.com. That's letstalk17.com.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Oh, Lord, turn on the television. I'm watching Martin Luther King, who had a dream. Oh, so take this dream and apply it to your life. Even though we know the ghetto's rah-rah, but we got to
keep your head up, baby. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to email me, please email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Get up, get up, get up. Where do we... I sometimes wonder a lot. How we're doing. The global picture of how and what we are doing out here. And one of the things that I look at, let me put it this way, some of the things that catch my eye are the quality of life issues that are out here. And also, there are just several things that are going on out here. We have what's happening to those of us that are in a certain age group. And then we have to look at those of us that are in the generation before them and the generation before them. Let me try to make it clearer. It is like that people are being beaten into helplessness, paralyzed, if you will, by things that are bigger than them, and things that are bigger than them and that don't have to be and that are there solely because of the opportunity of greed that has been provided and created by those in political places. That's all right. That's all right. Let me try to tie two things together. It's like the battle goes on, and this reminds me of the conversation that I had with Peter Downs yesterday on the School Watch, with their decision to do what they did with the thing that applied to Floyd Irons. Now, I understand that in the big picture of things, you don't want things to be unfair, but wait a minute. You're at war. Got to keep your focus on you're at war. People are going to be coming at you all kinds of ways because they want what you got. And the decisions have to be made on those things. Let me show you the at war piece. And it's designed to accommodate greed. And it's designed to accommodate keeping you paralyzed and terrified so that you don't want to fight. There's a baby in Detroit. In fact, he went to Lewis Cass Technical High School. Cass High School. I know Cass High School well. His baby's name is Javon Cochran. Now, understand the diabolicalness of this. This year's Javon Cochran's English class has been postponed. Instead of a mix of reading, writing, grammar, and vocabulary lessons and discussion, Javon, who's a junior, which means that would be the year before senior, the year before graduate, his English class has been postponed. He and his classmates are now drilling for the ACT exam. They must take the national scholastic test as part of Michigan's efforts to evaluate students under federal guidelines of the Every Child Left Behind. Oops, did I say that? The No Child Left Behind. So, as a result of this governmental policy put in place by Boy George and his minions, instead of English, they're all studying for the ACT test. Now, in past years, these babies would be reading novels, writing, being taught critical thinking, and being taught how things in the past apply to where they are today. Instead, they're studying for the ACT test. Or as this Javon puts it, we're learning just a bunch of crap that's going to be on the ACT test. Why? Because that's how they're going to be evaluated. The law requires schools to meet certain goals each year based largely on their test scores and on things like the ACT. The schools that do not, the kids don't do well on the ACT, may have to, let me see, privatize their school. So just think about the devilment of that. Think of the devilment of this act. It's brilliant in its deviltry. I mean, it's brilliant in its devilment, its deviltry, its devilness, its devil stuff. Brilliant. Because on the one hand, you are telling an entire generation of people, of babies, that you will have no future because you ain't going to learn nothing. And in addition, it's telling them that there's nothing you can do. You are powerless. If you want to read the great American novel, if your teacher wanted to teach you about a Toni Morrison novel, she can't. So you have to take the ACT test. That's one of the things that this No Child Left Behind is telling you. The second thing is that it's telling you, it's teaching you, it's conditioning you to understand that your entire value and assessment of you is based upon one test, an ACT test. And we are going to, if you don't do well in the ACT test, then we're going to be able to say that you are an underperforming student, irrespective of what your grades are. So therefore, we can classify you negatively, and you get to go through life with that negative assessment given to you during your formative years. That means the years in which the crap, negative crap, has a chance to land and lay and grow and define you. And then another component of this extraordinary devilment of the No Child Left Behind Act is this. If you don't do well, not on English, if you don't do well on this ACT test, then private folks can come in and strip your school district of all the money that it has. Have you ever heard the phrase, set up before? These babies are being set up to fail, set up to have no opportunities, and set up to be robbed. Oh, that's brilliant devilment. Setting them up to be robbed. And then when they're done robbing and raping them in their school districts, this No Child Left Behind pushes the babies out of school without a high school degree. Places like Florida, if you don't pass these tests, you don't get, irrespective of your grade point average, if you don't pass the test, then you don't. You get a piece of paper that's not quite a high school diploma. It's a piece of paper that tells the world, oh, no, you didn't even get a high school diploma. So what are your choices out there? Oh, your choices would be fodder for Iraq, Kosovo, Afghanistan. Or they have a brand new growing job industry in the American prisons to replace the migrant workers, the undocumented workers that were working out in the fields that folks are making sure they don't ever come back into America again. Brilliant devilment. The No Child Left Behind Act. And when I come back, I want to talk about what they're doing to not just the up-and-coming generations, but the generations that would be set to fight for these babies. How do we make sure that these babies aren't protected? You try to beat up on those who would naturally be trying to protect them. Give them their own set of problems. Oh, we got stuff to talk about this morning. Stay with me. To the mall to visit your Sears, why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else you gonna go? Tell me, please, where else you gonna go? You're gonna go to 3425 Union. You're gonna go to Sears. It's sunny outside. It makes me think of spring. I don't see the buds out there, but I do see the need of preparation for them. You need to go down to Sears at 3425 Union, get your tractor, get your lawnmower, get your garden tools, get your treadmill, get everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace. Come on now! Get on down to Sears at 3425 Union, the only Sears in the city of St. Louis. And you know what you do? Do you know what you do? Do you know what you do? You tell them that I told you to.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Do you feel confident about your money? If you're not sure, then join me, David Gaines, each Thursday morning from 11 to noon as we discuss the issues that affect your money on It's Your Money, presented by Heartland Bank. We'll have insightful guests discussing the topics that affect your money. That's Thursday mornings from 11 to noon for It's Your Money on 920 WGNU.
Securities offered through Securities America, Incorporated, member NASD SIPC. David Gaines, representative, Heartland Bank and Securities America are unaffiliated. Securities have no bank guarantees and are not FDIC insured and may lose value.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up, get up, get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. I've been talking about how they get our babies on the beginning. How do they get at people that are fighting for our babies, huh? I vividly remember in 1991, Hillary Clinton and her efforts to her efforts to, what's the word I'm looking for? Her efforts to change health care. I remember how she came into the meetings, the hearings, totally prepared, knowing everybody's name and things about them and being able to talk about this without looking at her notes. She was impressive and terrifying to a lot of folks. I wasn't terrified by it. I thought, cool, let's get this healthcare discussion on. She was trash. She was tanked. She was swift boated, and then she folded her tent and said, never again in life. Never again in life will I do that again. And she didn't. Not without a whole lot of effort of looking at the polls, and she learned from that. But the fact of the matter is as hard as our babies have it to move forward in their lives with the roadblocks that have been put up, not, you know, it's fascinating in the year 2007, 007, is that the new kinds of roadblocks that are being put up for our babies, not 100% about race, but 100% about, no, not entirely about race. But also about just extraordinary. I guess it's all about greed. I mean, it's all about race because it's about the money that they can get. But the No Child Left Behind piece is about the greed. Well, let me just talk about what the people that would be fighting for these babies are going through. There's an article that's come out of the New York Times about health care. And it talks about what middle class America, I'm talking about people that make $60,000, $70,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And their lives without health insurance. And who this affects. I'll give you an example. This article talks about one woman in particular who made $60,000 a year. She's an independent contractor because she works in the real estate industry. So she does not receive health benefits from an employer. She had cancer, and she tried to buy a policy in the individual insurance market, but because she had cancer, she could not get medical coverage except for coverage. Are you ready for this? Coverage that costs $27,000 a year. These blood-sucking sons of guns. $27,000 a year. And she said, Ms. Redling said, I don't know what was worse, being told that I had cancer or finding out that I could not get insurance. What a horrible way to have to live. She lives in a really nice area. And the ranks of uninsured have been swelling. There are 6.8 million, an increase of 6.8 million since the year 2000. And solidly middle class people like Ms. Redling are one of the fastest growing subgroups. More than one-third of the uninsured, 17 million, and how many uninsured people are there out there? 47 million. But more than 17 million of them have incomes of over $40,000 a year. And this just breaks my heart. She also wants to get married, engaged to be married. She's supposed to be married in June to another real estate agent, but she said she's going to postpone her wedding because she doesn't want her husband to be legally responsible for her medical bills. I'm scared to get married because I don't have insurance. If I have to go to the hospital and I can't pay my hospital bills, what happens? Do they go after him? Can they take away your home? Welcome to America. They're getting our babies on that end with no child left behind. And they're getting the grown-ups who are supposed to be out there fighting for them on the other end with an obscene and sinful healthcare industry that says you have to pay $27,000 a year to these greedy sons of guns that are paying their CEOs parachutes, that golden parachutes that, again, are sin against God. Three cheers for the red, white, and blue, right? Right? Donna.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm calling this morning because we have another victory that we can celebrate over. Yesterday, I know a lot of people have read about the Republican-led Missouri House to fight its own leaders, not to mention Republican Governor Matt Blunt and Governor Lieutenant Peter Kinder by killing the controversial bill Wednesday that would have used tax credits to send thousands of...
No, let's call it what it is, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it the voucher bill because that's exactly
right.
What it is. Yeah, I was going to talk about that on Eye in the Lou.
Right.
But you're right.
I'm so happy.
Won the voucher bill fight, yes. And I also think that people need to know out here, Donna, that there was a clarion cry that went out to Republicans all across this nation by the proponents of this voucher bill. There were national Republican leaders that were calling little Republicans that were House members here in the state of Missouri. From all across this country, they were calling those legislators, trying to get them to make sure they got that voucher bill passed.
Well, I'm so glad that they were defeated.
That's right. Another victory. This has been an amazing run.
Yes, and I wanted to make a comment about the bill that Smith and Taliban want to introduce.
Well, Donna, can you please? Is it too inconvenient for you to call me in the 7 o'clock hour?
Okay.
Because Eye on the Lou, and I really want to totally dissect that.
Okay.
So will you please call me in the 7 o'clock hour?
Thank you.
That was school board member Donna Jones. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you doing this morning?
I am outstanding.
I believe it. I understand that Valerie Perlain and Joe Wilson are in the process of doing a civil lawsuit against Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney.
Go get them. Go get them. Dick Cheney got deep pockets. Go get them.
That'll work. In your professional opinion, is how much of a chance will they have to succeed in?
Michael, I would love to be able to tell you that I know, but I don't. I have no idea of how much money they could possibly receive off that. I don't even know if it is a lawsuit that has any merit. I don't know. But I sure like the idea of it being pursued to find out if they can. I sure like the idea of it. And you know, if it could be done to an O.J. Simpson, then it can be done to other folks out here. Go get a civil lawsuit. And a civil lawsuit may bring forth all kinds of additional information.
Okay.
So go get them. They can get depositions.
I
they can do all.
Else too. Today is my daughter's birthday. I'd like to give a shout out to her.
Well, what's her name?
Her name is Takara.
Takara
Bowen.
All right. How old is she?
She just turned one.
Oh, bless her heart. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Take care.
Listen, folks, Eye on the Lou is next. You don't want to miss it. Much good stuff. This is Liz Brown and the Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
Our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember?
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Tell me, brother, how can you
the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. It's the deadliest fire in New York City in a decade. 9 people killed when the flames swept through a crowded apartment building. 8 of the victims were children. This witness watched a mother throw her kids down to him, and then another man, and then leap herself.
She jumped out of the third floor window. She broke, eventually it seemed like she broke both her legs. A lot of flames, smoke, couldn't see nothing. Actually, I couldn't see the kids coming down either. Just took a guess and it fell right in my house.
There's no word yet on what caused the fire. It probably began in the basement of the first floor of the building. Most of the tenants, we're told, were immigrants from the African nation of Mali. NASA's fired an astronaut at the heart of a high-profile romantic triangle charged with trying to kidnap her romantic rival.
This is Lisa Nowak's last official day as an astronaut. She will then be sent to the Navy's command, working out of Corpus Christi. Now, Nowak's firing follows new details about the man she was having an affair with, astronaut Bill Ofelein. While Nowak has been fired, Ofelein remains a member of NASA's elite team of astronauts. His behavior may have embarrassed NASA, but adultery is not grounds for dismissal. Mike Von Fremd, ABC News at the Johnson Space Center.
The new man in charge of U.S. troops in Iraq says he knows militants are gaining strength, but General David Petraeus says they're doing all they can to stop them and that they're getting help from Iraqi forces.
We share the horror and the sorrow and the sadness at seeing the pilgrims attacked.
Petraeus says more U.S. forces are going to be sent to the areas of Iraq where insurgent violence is getting its worst. A fourth day of congressional hearings into problems at Walter Reed Army Medical Center will get underway later today. The House Armed Services Committee this time will be asking the questions. President Bush says he supports the process of the hearings, and he also will be listening very closely to what a bipartisan commission that he's tapped to look into problems at the hospitals nationwide finds. This is ABC News.
Honey, remember how I felt after swing dancing?
Oh, but you got a pain reliever for your arthritis pain.
That wasn't as bad as...
I'm a visiting nurse, but sometimes I feel like the patient. Running all over the city, I needed a pain reliever for my arthritis pain. Lifting Mrs. Rizzo into her chair, I needed something else for backaches. Different pains, different pain relievers, but not anymore. Today, I'm all Advil. It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt. Nothing's proven stronger on tough pain than Advil. Whatever hurts, I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Compared to OTC pain relievers for minor arthritis pain, use as directed.
Top three reasons I'm getting new appliances at the Home Depot. Number three, the new LG washers and dryers. Sort of sexy. My washer and dryer, not sexy. Number two, a new stove will take my mac and cheese to the next level. And number one, simple, 10% off.
Now through Sunday at the Home Depot, save 10% on all appliance purchases of $297 or more. The top brands and latest styles. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through March 11th in U.S. only. See store for details.
Joe from Rocky Face, Georgia, actually make that an average Ed. Here's ABC's Stephen Portnoy.
Ed Neighbors says he sat in his truck staring at his winning ticket for about 20 minutes.
And the computer in the truck beeped, and I think it was my dispatcher wanting to know why I was sitting still so long. I never did get back to him.
The 52-year-old says he knows his whole family's life has changed.
My daughter has wanted a house and get out of a mobile home for a long time, and I think she just got...
After taxes, lottery officials say Neighbors will take home more than $80 million. What's he going to do now?
I'm going fishing.
Okay.
Stephen Portnoy, ABC News.
Two baggage handlers have been arrested in Florida after they allegedly smuggled a bag of guns and drugs onto a flight to Puerto Rico. Documents say they used air employee uniforms and airport ID cards to get by security. They had passed federal background checks. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, St. Louis is breaking a barrier with the election of its first African-American president of the Board of Aldermen. Lewis Reed defeated incumbent Jim Shrewsbury in the primary election on Tuesday. Shrewsbury, who had more experience, name recognition, and money, was heavily favored in the election. Reed is unopposed in the general election and will be sworn in before the first meeting of the board's next session in April. A suspended lawyer could soon be practicing again. Eric Vickers had his license suspended for professional misconduct in 1999 and also owes thousands of dollars in back taxes. However, the agency that polices lawyers in Missouri is recommending that Vickers be permitted to practice law again. If Vickers is reinstated, he would be on probation and work with a mentoring attorney. The decision, which will be made by the Missouri Supreme Court, could take months. Finally this hour, the St. Louis Zoo's newest resident has a new name. Thousands of votes poured in to name the 236-pound Asian elephant calf that was born to Mother Ronnie and Father Raja on Sunday night. Yesterday, zookeepers revealed the winning name, Jade. Votes were cast online at stlzoo.org and through postcards and letters sent directly to the zoo. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Westbound 5570 at 64 split all the way in the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for stop traffic. That accident's been cleared just before the entrance to westbound 70, but expect a whole lot of delays. Westbound 5570 from Illinois 203 in the 64. Look for slow areas from 5570 just west, east of 203 in the 64. Westbound 64 from 25th through the 5570 merge, stop and go traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is messed up as two. From 5570 split all the way into the landing, and Illinois Route 3 is stop and go at the top of that ramp all the way back through Monsanto Avenue. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and 44. That accident's been cleared at Doherty Ferry. Expect stop and go traffic. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain through Graham Hanley. Look for stop and go traffic due to an accident on the shoulder at Old Halls Ferry. Northbound 55 from Route M through Imperial Main. Look for a vehicle on fire at Imperial Main, so slow traffic there. Eastbound 70 at Bryan Road and 79. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between Maryville Center and Mason. Then again from Ballast through McKnight. Look for some slow traffic there. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for slowdowns. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270. You've got heavy volume there. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270, heavy volume there as well. And eastbound 70 approaching St. Charles Rock Road all the way back through 270. Look for some slowdowns. Northbound 270 at Dorset into the 70 exit lanes. Look for delays as well. And northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway into 44. Look for some slowdowns. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny skies, high around lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy, low around 40. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers in the afternoon with a high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers with a low in the mid 40s. And Saturday, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a chance of showers, then becoming partly sunny in the afternoon, high in the lower 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 28 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 29. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. It's Eye on the Lou. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Power. Nobody is going to give it.
it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
It's time now for Eye on the Lou. Redistricting, hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson.
Welcome, 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 welcome to Eye on the Lou. My name is Liz Brown, and we have much, 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 much to talk about. Normally, I am joined by Irene J. Smith, but I am flying solo this morning, and it's a shame because today is a day of celebration as we put our eye on the Lou. Yes, it's a day of celebration if you don't know, I don't know why you don't know. Yesterday was a remarkable day. The day before yesterday was a remarkable day. We had the election of the first person of African descent to be elected into the president of the Board of Aldermen seat. Louis Reed is now our president-elect. History-making, defeating a 100-year incumbent. Louis Reed, Jim Shrewsbury started that race with 23 years of experience, 100% name recognition, over $130,000 in the bank, and the support of all of his aldermen. Louis Reed came into the race $5,000 in debt, 12% name recognition, and no support of aldermen. That's a handful of aldermen. Turned it all the way. And also, Louis Reed came into this race 5 months outside of it. This is one for the history books. This is a defeat, a win for the history books. Oh, it's a glorious day. It's a glorious Eye on the Lou day. You want your eye? Oh, well, Irene, you need to come on in here. Irene is here. Yeah, we're going to talk about this. My name is Liz Brown. This is Eye on the Lou. Get with me.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Has the church failed Black America? Don't miss today's Sloan Ranger Show on WGNU. Dr. Steve Cole explores that question tonight at 5:15 with Lloyd Sloan. That's the Sloan Ranger with Lloyd Sloan, 5 till 7 weeknights on AM 920 WGNU.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Eye on the Loo. My name is Liz Brown, and I'm here with Irene J. Smith. And Irene J. Smith, good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and your listening audience.
How you doing this morning?
Doing real well.
All right. We have quite a conversation today. History was made all over the place on Tuesday, all over the place.
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. It was. And before I came in this morning, I saw an interview with Lewis finally on the television, and he was talking about, his first week. He talked about the housekeeping matters in terms of staff, and they asked him what was he going to do his first week, and he talked about getting with each one of the aldermen and touring their area to see what their specific needs were to work on a legislative agenda that addresses the needs. He spoke about meeting with the residents in each of the areas, other significant organizations in the area, churches, to develop a legislative agenda in conjunction with the aldermen and the
people.
Stop it.
I can't take anymore. I just cannot take anymore. What?
That's the
what?
Way it's supposed to be.
That is exactly the way it's supposed to be.
These are things that we have talked about that need to be done. And then, of course, the golden question is, you know, even though he hasn't been sworn in yet, do you plan to run for mayor? You know, and basically focus right in on, you know, right now, you know, I've got this job. I'm not even thinking about that. We have a great deal to do in terms of assisting our city throughout St. Louis, and that is my focus. We must have a legislative agenda because
what
of
a
course,
novel idea.
Right.
You know,
right.
Have a legislative agenda. I told Lewis yesterday, you know what, one of the first things you need to do is you need to have a ribbon cutting ceremony at the front door of the president of the Board of Aldermen office, you know, because it's been locked for years and years and years and years. Have a ribbon cutting, a sign say, all are welcome, come on.
I definitely didn't. And with blue and yellow ribbons.
There you go.
He definitely needs to do that. That's a great idea. But it was interesting. I mean, immediately, you know, not going into what do you think some of the things that the city needs, but the next question is, people, are you going to run for mayor? You know, so.
And I also think it's so interesting, Irene. I was at when the votes came out, I was at his campaign headquarters at the party. And it was fascinating to me to see there was one news camera there. One, and it came late. One news camera there. Come on. It was going to be, it could have been a history making, and also the news media that had something that you and I both know is a rare thing. The first announcement about the absentees.
Lewis was ahead.
Right.
The second vote count, Lewis was ahead. The third vote count, Lewis was ahead. And still no cameras? And still no
and
cameras?
And it was very interesting because I listened to the show on yesterday, and as I was, you know, like kind of surfing to see what the coverage was, you know, and then my mom came and said, Lewis won. I said, where'd you find that out? You know, I was getting calls from the election board about what the numbers were coming in. I said, because we haven't seen anything on television. So yesterday, I took a little time and I went to the websites. I didn't get to go to all of them, but I went to Camel X and I looked at, you know, the stories, news, you know, local stories. And it was amazing to me that among the local stories was not Lewis's win as president of the Board of Aldermen, you know, watermelon salsa, you know, Floyd Irons might get back with St. Louis Zoo announces name, a new baby elephant.
Floyd Irons might get back with the zoo?
I did not say that. So, I mean, it was interesting the way, I mean, it wasn't interesting. It was typical kind of St. Louis, even in terms of the focus on elections in this city. The same type of lack of coverage that was seen when we ran for mayor, same thing in Lewis's race, and he was able to overcome all of that, which is significant.
And when we go to Irene, and that's the thing that this race was historical, unprecedented, and against all odds. If that's not a sexy story to report, if that's not to say, oh my God, look at what this guy was able to do with $5,000 in debt, with no name recognition, a black man from a South Side ward with no black constituency support, so they say, and no support of his other alderman, or very little support of his other alderman, and he beat a 23-year veteran, if that's not a sexy story, I don't know what is. That's a racial alder all over the place.
It's an excellent story to cover. And plus, you know, I think the media has an obligation to educate the public about what's going on in our city. There was a citywide, this wasn't a automatic race. This was a citywide race, and the coverage again was very dismal, which says a lot about us as a city in terms of our media, you know. But for you and a few other radio stations, were it not for the radio stations and particularly your show, people would not have even known that there was a president of Board of Aldermen race going on. It seems that, and I'm hopeful that Lewis will look into it. A lot, his mailings did not completely get out.
That's what I heard.
You would get one piece, and because I would, check, and his mailings went. But despite that, you know, Shrewsbury sending six mailings, you know, they might have just said, oh.
$300,000 worth. He had $300,000 that he spent on mailings, on television commercials. That's a whole lot of money.
You know, and plus you have people such as, you know, Harold Brown on the ground going to these senior citizen centers. And what people should look at, if a person does, you know, thinking that he had a good relationship because, you know, he was with Senator Patrick Doherty, but a lot of the seniors were really turned off because apparently some promises had been made when he was an aide to Senator Doherty that wasn't kept, and those seniors harbored that because I spoke with a number of them. So it was just really interesting. Normally, historically, maybe a lot of people don't really remember this, but Shrewsbury is known for going around to the polls and handing out some candy, where I never feel comfortable eating the candy. So, but he would go,
right.
Go around. And this time it was so interesting to me. People come and say, Miss Shrewsbury's over here this early in the morning. He was over in our ward at several high voting precincts in our ward twice on election day. And they
handed out candy?
He didn't hand out candy this time. Okay. Maybe, you know, he didn't hand out no candy this time. The first time they said, Mrs. Shrewsbury was here, Irene, you know, Alderwoman Shrewsbury just left. That was this morning. And I came back. They said, he just came again. He was so red in the face.
But check
more
this,
people were coming out.
But check this out. When he was at his polling places and somebody walked out of his polling place over on the south side and they asked him, how's it going? He said, I've been over the north side. They asleep over there. And someone I know also went to the Shrewsbury headquarters on the night of the election results, and he walked into it, and he said, Liz, it was like it was like somebody died. And this was early, this was even before the absentee ballots came out. They knew then. They knew it was bad then.
They knew it was bad. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It was a low turnout, 13.3% turnout throughout the city. It was a low voter turnout. But it appears, and we don't have the complete ward breakdown,
yeah.
It appears that Northside voted.
When you're talking about, we have in the 22nd ward over 1,000 people voting. When we're talking about over in O.L. Shelton's ward over 1,000 people voting. When we talk about those types of wards bringing those kinds of numbers, it's an amazing thing.
It's
it's a Northside thing.
Yes, it is. And considering the fact that, again, there was a low voter turnout, we're not taking anything from that. But you look at the numbers. You look at the contested races. I mean, you look at the turnout in the 6th ward, Lewis's home ward.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, Triplett, young sister won, you know, 50% of the vote. She won. But look at the numbers, in terms of, you know, relating them to the overall numbers, you know, big numbers. The 16th ward, yes, turned out. But interesting in the 16th ward, lower than normal. Lower than normal turnout. And this is Shrewsbury's base. I mean, you know, look, he almost received, what? I'm looking at the votes Donna Behringer got. And I'm saying, oh, well, maybe Shrewsbury got all of those votes, okay? We're looking at about 2,000 votes. 16th district, your homeboy is, his position is on the line. No turnout for you.
None.
You know,
none.
Not the kind of turnout that he needed.
And what? And also, when you look, when you hear him dissect and deconstruct this election, one of the things that Jim Shrewsbury talks about is that, well, we had the race over in the South Side where we had a Republican on the ballot, and they went and had to pull Republican ballots, and that made the difference. But that was only 700 and something votes.
That's what I said.
You know, so that couldn't have, if everybody had voted for you, you still would not have a job.
And it was interesting because even the 12th ward did not turn out the votes that it normally turns out. So here we have this situation where you're talking about people certainly look and say, okay, there's a contested race in the 12th ward, you know, Fred Hyder's ward, the long Republican on the Board of Aldermen, who incidentally has another race next month because there's a Democrat in the race against him. As you indicated,
they pulled Republican ballots.
Less than 800 votes, you know, which would have not made a difference had there not been a contested race in the 12th ward and those individuals voted for Shrewsbury. That would not have helped.
And also, can we have a quick little conversation here, Irene, about Fred Hyder? You know, your people didn't turn out and vote
right.
for you. Your people didn't. So what's up with what's going on the South Side with the understanding that they're going to get the votes and people are going to come? Fred Hyder, who's been there longer than forever, his people did not turn. That's a horrible showing for a high voting ward for an incumbent. That's a horrible showing.
Where it's a contested.
Yeah.
It is a contested.
A cop Democrat who was wounded
no,
in the
Republican.
Line. Republican.
He ran as a Republican.
Okay. So, but a cop.
Right.
And so we still did not have the turnout that ward is known for.
Exactly. And with a police officer such as Matthew Browning, who was a very personable individual, and who a lot of people kind of are engaged with, you know, it's dismal turnout over there. But what we're seeing is, and this is, as I've looked at returns throughout the country and particularly in Missouri with Kansas City, these low voter turnouts are interesting, and perhaps these low voter turnouts are an opportunity for the African American community and something that helps the city as a whole for voters to come out and have their say.
We'll be back. This is Eye on the Lou. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. Stay with me.
morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and weather. A lot of mess out there. 270 westbound between Bell Fountain and Graham Hanley. Stop and go traffic due to an accident. Shoulders blocked. It's on Old Halls Ferry, and the ramp to Old Halls Ferry is blocked. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 split all the way into the landing is stop and go. Northbound Route 3, that ramp is slow or stop and go from Monsanto all the way onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Westbound 5570 from 64 split in the PSB. Look for stop-and-go traffic due to an earlier accident that was cleared, and it's just at the entrance of westbound 70. Westbound 5570 from Illinois 203 to 64. Look for stop-and-go traffic. And westbound 64 from 25th into the 5570 merge. Look for stop-and-go traffic there as well. Eastbound 70 from 270 into St. Charles Rock Road. Look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 from Dorset through 70. Look for slow traffic in the exit lanes. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for delays. Eastbound 40 from Maryville Center into Mason, and then again from Ballas into McKnight. Look for some slowdowns there. There's an accident, 94 southbound at Mid Rivers Mall. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for some slowdowns there. Northbound 270 at Grabway and Doherty Ferry. Look for some delays around a 44 interchange. And there's also some, there's been an accident that's been cleared, so you can expect delays. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270. Look for some slowdowns there. And then again from 3200 South Broadway through 44. Look for some delays there as well. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. It's going to be a beautiful day today, mostly sunny, high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy, low around 40. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers in the afternoon, high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, low in the mid-40s. And Saturday, mostly cloudy, chance of showers in the morning, and partly sunny by the afternoon, with a high in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 27 degrees and clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 30. And clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's the Eye on the Lou segment with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. It's on the way. Take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. At 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
For my business, I want a bank with ideas.
For my business, I want a bank with solutions.
That business bank is Heartland Bank, with innovative products and services and a knowledgeable staff to provide solutions.
I want a business bank that listens.
I want a business bank that responds.
That's Heartland. Offering personal one-on-one attention with the responsiveness today's business world demands. Heartland means business. So call Heartland Bank today at 314-512-8888 to start your new business banking relationship. Heartland Bank is FDIC-insured equal housing lender.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. No, this is Eye on the Lou. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. We're talking about the election results. We're talking about what's going on in this city, all the things that are percolating through. And, Irene, you have a thought?
Yeah, just one other thought about the President of the Board of Aldermen race. The other thing is I think that Lewis was able to convey his message about we need a legislative agenda, and this message was also embraced by more people in South St. Louis than Jim Shrewsbury thought would embrace this message. And I think the fact of the commercials that were ran, and particularly those that focused in on who really is Jim Shrewsbury, and you know, this needs a full-time person in this. And here you have Jim Shrewsbury, who talks about the city. You're not, and your business is not in the city. You're not investing in the city. And I think people embrace part of that.
The lovely part to me was the educational piece that went on with this election, how people came to be vested in this office, and many people who really had no idea about this office and how important this office is. So it was delightful to see people taking ownership after being educated about this office, taking ownership of it and going out and making a stance on it and voting for Lewis Reed.
Oh, very, very definitely, very definitely. But, you know, and considering, again, the low voter turnout, but it's like this. The mayor of the city had a low voter turnout in 05. So Lewis is the winner. I mean, 54% of the vote. So certainly, congratulations to Lewis, and, look forward to seeing, him work to put together a legislative agenda that addresses all of St. Louis.
And the other interesting dynamic of this, or something to watch for, is I see in Frances Slay, with Darlene Green there and with Lewis Reed there now, Frances Slay is kind of like, oh, what's the word I'm looking for, a George W. Bush in a new Democratic majority, that George W. Bush now has to roll a little differently than he rolled before when he had both the House and the Senate. Frances Slay is now going to have to roll a little differently now that there is Lewis Reed as the president, and also with a plan for an agenda, which, again, is something that people can, once people are given this information about what the president of the Board of Aldermen can
do,
everybody going to have to step up.
Right.
Everybody going to have
because
to step
some,
up.
Because there are some expectations
Absolutely.
That heretofore perhaps people have not had. I mean, when you listen to, and you think about folks that are just kept in the box, and I'm talking about Jim Shrewsbury, when you tell people there's little I can do to help with development, that's the individual alderman's responsibility. This is an antiquated, age-old, you know, territorial thing, not thinking, but you're running citywide, but then you're going to tell a person, well, look, hey, I can
visit your church on Sunday, but I can't do nothing.
Yeah, hey, I can drink punch with you, hey, I can let your preacher come in and pray.
For
some people, but if it's a 13-year-old that happens to be a child of a colleague of mine who is supporting Lewis Reed, and now you can't pray for that. You know, and what's interesting, somebody asked me yesterday, boy, when you get ready to leave, people try to put everything on you. They said, well, it's my understanding that Shrewsbury asked Pat Connaughton if it would be okay to pray for Jennifer Florida's son, and he told him no, so that's why he didn't allow. I said, come on. I said, hey, you know, historically we have prayed for everybody. You know, we prayed for Tom Barr when he lost his donkey dad, okay?
But wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. Aside from what you just said, but also in the same morning, he prayed for the two boys that were kidnapped out there. He didn't ask Pat Connaughton for a legal opinion on that. I understand you need to put out damage control.
Yeah, I mean,
it's getting into people's ears and hearts that this is a manner of man. So you got to come up with some
explanation. Right, you got to come up with something.
Some explanation.
But that just goes to the arrogance of Shrewsbury, and plus his really lack of understanding. I mean, this is somebody their entire life. They wanted to go to the Board of Aldermen. They were going to be president one day, and then they had planned to be mayor one day. So here you have.
Whoops.
Shrewsbury, who didn't see it coming, was blindsided. You know, people said, well, where is Shrewsbury now? I haven't seen many interviews. I said, well, you know, he's trying to get over. You know, it's like a man, you're talking about going on a drunk.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that the man drinks, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, at the Wine and Roses thing, when there were lots of black folks, he had a good number of drinks when he was there that night. So I do know that he drinks.
I don't know, but I think that, and I'm hopeful that this is a new day. I mean, just the fact to look at an interview on television where the president-elect of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, is saying, I'm going to get with each one of my colleagues. I'm going to go around in their area. I'm going to find out the needs of their community. And then we're going to come together, put a legislative agenda that incidentally comes from the legislative body and that is not initiated by the executive body, the mayor. We're going to put together a legislative agenda that addresses the needs in each community. We have talked about this. It's not a novel idea. Hey,
but here's the
first week. This is what the president-elect of the Board of Aldermen says he plans to do.
And here is something that I was thinking about as you were relaying that story, and that is when you go around and you represent an entire city, and you go to one ward and you say, wow, this ward has most of its needs met. And you go to this other ward and you see this ward has a whole lot of needs to be met, then the common sense thing to do as an elected official who's representing an entire city is it's like, okay, well then we can, you know, we don't have to focus a lot of the resources that are maybe going to this ward that is good to go. We can now make the rest of the city whole. But when you live in this world of, and you operate in this world of, they gonna get everything that they need, and even if it's in excess of it at the expense of the rest of the city, then that's why the city looks like what it looks like.
And it's also, you know, I listened to somebody say, well, Shrewsbury said there's nothing he can do to help with development. Yes, you can. As the president of the Board of Aldermen, as a member of ENA, you are voting on every piece of TIF legislation that comes through. And I believe that the comptroller is willing, because she demonstrated it in this BJC deal, to come together and leverage something out of every deal that comes through for communities that are lacking. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see more community benefit agreements being made out of legislation, out of deals, big deals that are coming through the city.
And the beautiful thing about this, and I do want to underscore this for folks, is that I think it is rare that we see someone who was so uniquely and profoundly qualified to be in this position with his legislative experience as an alderman for 6 years and with his business experience in terms of development and knowing developers and knowing how development works and knowing the role of development within cities. For a position like this, the president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, is profoundly qualified to engage in those discussions and to create that legislative agenda.
Yes, he is. And it's something that, I mean, and because Lewis is so, he's into business and he's into development, there's a piece about him that he doesn't often talk about that a lot of people, unless they work with him or know, that he also is very, he has a social responsibility agenda that a lot of people don't know about. You know, you think about people, Lord, about the Gateway Classic. Lewis was instrumental, put a lot of money into that early on. When community education centers, when the mayor of this city defunded them under block grant, which was okay, a legislative agenda, the Board of Aldermen participated in that as well. But he said, well, in my ward, I've got to fund it and take care of it. So he understands that. There are a number of other things. The Institute over on Jefferson with the young people learning radio and video and editing, you know, instrumental in these sorts of things as well. So I think that we're going to see some different things. And as you said yesterday, it is our responsibility to make sure that people deliver on the things that they told us that they were going to deliver on and how they are going to conduct the office of the president of the Board of Aldermen, particularly after the doors are unlocked.
1-877-920-WGNU. It was a joyous thing yesterday to hear voices from all across this city, excited, thrilled voices about the election of Lewis Curtis Reed. It was just a beautiful thing to hear yesterday. David.
Hey, I'd like to say you two ladies are great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Great. And look, I got a couple questions here. You know, first I got a question for you, Irene.
Okay.
Okay. Now, do you remember when two aldermen, a father and son, were accused of hiring two guys to beat up Shrewsbury?
You talking about Sarkis Webby Jr.?
Yes.
Over in Doris Webby? Yes, I remember.
You look so young, I didn't think you would remember that.
Yeah, I remember.
Now, you know, I just want to say something. You know, oh, wow, you guys are getting ready to go.
Hold on. Well, I'll hold you on, but we got to come back quick, okay? All right. We're going to take a break. This is Eye on the Lou. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. My name is Liz Brown. We've got some more. Need to talk about the Jeff Smith agenda, and also I want to make some observations about the company the folks are keeping. We'll be back. Stay with us. The place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
What America needs is affordable health insurance. Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds. Those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
Tune in every Thursday at noon till 1 p.m. on WGNU 920 on the AM dial. You can talk to Dr. Walker and her guests weekly to discuss health and medical issues. Nurse Wanda always has information that you won't want to miss. Every show is different, and talking to Dr. Walker is always fun. Call 314-454-0400. You can also listen to Dr. Walker's Medical Hour on the Internet. Log on to WGNU.net. Click on Listen Live.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. You need to get up. You need to get to us. We have much to talk about. And let me get to David right quick. Quickly, David, please.
Oh, I was just getting ready to say that I hope people learn examples from the past. I think when you had Bosley Jr. as the mayor, basically he did, I know him not to do anything against white males with influence and power. He gave them everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is, this guy needs to sign out. All this stuff in the past, he needs to drop. He has to be responsible to his community.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-877-920-WGNU. Donna Jones,
yes,
school board member. Good morning.
Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. And I wanted to make a comment about the Jeff Smith's piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really, they could have thought this out very well. My son gets out of school at little around 4:10 in the evening.
And Donna, which part specifically are you referring to?
I'm talking about the 90 extra minutes to the school day.
Okay. Okay.
It's crazy to me because he gets home at 5 o'clock in the evening, and he's an elementary school child. And he could possibly be arriving around between 6 and 6:30 p.m. Why would we have young children out on the street at that time of evening, anywhere? And then my other son that's in high school, he has to be on his bus at 6 o'clock in the morning. So that means he has to get up. We are not putting in consideration travel time. We have children that... The attention span is lost after a while.
Well, if they're going to do anything with respect to children in school and their timepieces, you need the studies are showing that you need to start school later in the morning because that's the time that children are better able to learn. When you're getting babies up at 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, I mean, when I went to school, we started school at 9 o'clock. That's the time that they're saying that kids learn. And now they're talking about keeping them up at 6 and then keep them there an extra 90 minutes. I feel you on that.
Yeah, I guess my thing, I'm not necessarily opposed to the extension of the day. It depends on what that extension entails, okay? Because currently my nephew attends a school where he's there at 8:15. He doesn't really get out until 6. It's not just that it is instructional, but there are other activities to enrich his learning that is done in the later hours. But my thing, initially, the first thing that came to my mind is, who's going to pay for the additional 90 minutes? That's additional teaching time that has to, where the teachers have to be compensated. So where is that money coming from? The piece about, the truancy, I think social services should be responsible. I think it's unfair, particularly since the Board of Education does not have the resources to provide individuals that can go out and check to see where these children are, that there should be a collaboration between the state to go check on these babies who are not coming to school. And to put that burden on the school is wrong.
I would just like to say the last thing. A lot of our children have after-school activities that they participate in. They have family activities, and a lot of them have after-school jobs that they need to hold. So if they want this for an after-school program, that would be a wonderful thing. But a lot of our kids have other things that they are involved in.
And also, again, we have to underscore that a lot of our kids are up in the morning at 6 o'clock.
Yes, they
are.
You
know, and that's ridiculous to add that kind of time to babies that are up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
It depends on how it's structured, you know. But what's interesting to me is that, and I specifically remember at the forum that OBS did for the senatorial race, that we raised this issue about charters, and I think one of the things that Senator Smith said, was that, you know, he would come back to the community. My question is, has he had any town hall meetings in the 4th Senatorial District that talked about the type of legislation that was needed to address this? I think
he was too busy trying to get his candidate elected over there in Frank Williamson's ward. That's where his time and focus was, for him to come and bring this trifling charter piece of legislation that gives Francis Slay the ability to create a charter school. Given what Francis Slay has done to the St. Louis public schools, given all these other outside entities the ability to come into the city of St. Louis and create more charter schools when there is nothing that has been shown in any of the statistics that charter schools do better than public schools. In fact, most of the time they do worse in the city of St. Louis, and he wants to create more of them and without a single town hall meeting. Listen to this.
We talk about our kids who currently improving the environment for our children who currently attend public schools, okay, or who attend public schools. You want to authorize the mayor to create a workplace charter school. This is not talking about our babies. This is trying to create an environment for the businesses that currently exist and the people that work there. Now, we've heard a lot about, to give Francis Slay the authority to establish a charter school. I mean, let's look at Francis Slay's track record in terms of our educational system. Who bought in and was supportive of Bill Roberti? Who was supportive of giving an individual who had no background in education, uncertified, unqualified, but yet was in support of Kit King giving him a waiver to be the superintendent of our public schools. It was under his watch that we plummeted in terms of accreditation points. So now you want to give the mayor of the city, and all you need to do is look to Chicago to see what giving a mayor, you know, you're not even addressing the needs. We can't even get a water main cover in the city, and we're going to give you the authority to run schools now. You're not even taking care of the business that you're responsible taking care of for the city of St. Louis.
And again, we got to discuss the type of responsibility or option that you're giving the mayor of the city of St. Louis, giving Francis Slay, who has been incompetent in his handling of the St. Louis public schools. Charter schools don't have the same type of oversight as public schools.
No, they
schools
do not.
So you're giving him another blank check to do what he wants to without oversight. They don't have a school board that the people have access to. They don't have, and they get all the money that they need for their charter school, and it's for profit. So we're giving Francis Slay an opportunity to take money from our babies that are learning in environments that are better records than the charter schools, giving him another blank check. And when he was given the blank check of the St. Louis public schools, we lost 26 points in accreditation points. We lost teachers. We lost students. We lost schools. We lost hope. We lost all kinds of things when he was in charge. And now Jeff Smith, without a single town hall meeting that I'm aware of, without a single town hall meeting, has said, I'm going to go give Francis Slay and any other university that I work for, that I've taught for, an opportunity to steal money from our district.
Exactly.
As well.
I mean, this is about fleecing. Yes. And this is about taking money. And because if they were concerned about our children, they would be pushing forth agendas that would put more teachers in the classroom.
And pay them.
They would be pushing forth an agenda that creates a safe and nurturing environment for our children. They would be coming into the schools. I don't know that I've ever, and I haven't attended every school board meeting, but I don't know that I've ever seen any news coverage or anything where Francis Slay even attended a school board meeting.
When Roberti and them got in, he was there.
Okay. Well,
the first day that he shuffled on in that day. But my question is that, has Jeff Smith been to all of our schools? Has Jeff Smith held any town hall meetings with the teachers? Has he listened to what the superintendent has reported about what has happened in charter? Has he examined the charter school that his superintendent, the superintendent, used to be part of and has said is not doing a good job?
Right.
Has he looked at the records of his own charter school?
No, he could just look at the charter school that he's responsible for founding.
That's what I'm saying.
And particularly the one that's over on Thekla in the first ward, where I have talked to people, and the only reason that many people have left their kids in there, they say, well, we think it's a little more safe environment, but I'm not really pleased
with the education.
So then here you are, taking it upon yourself,
upon
all knowing, you know, everything.
That's that racist attitude.
Attitude. But yet you are not pulling in the stakeholders. You are not pulling in the teachers, the superintendent. You are not pulling in the parents.
Oh, he's talking to Francis.
And others who know. But Francis Slay has never attended a public school, nor has his children.
Nor does he have any intention of anybody in his family attending a public school.
This is about privatizing and destroying public education. And this is about getting at those public dollars.
And wait a minute, before we go, we have 2 seconds here. What's up with Jeff Smith and Talib El Amin standing together and together in front of the jail about with the education bill? Huh? Didn't Jeff Smith beat El Amin's wife? What's up with that?
Perhaps there's a relationship that has pre-existed this time, but the fact that you stand in front of a jail. And you're right, our babies are going to jail because of individuals who are in positions of power that fail to truly understand the totality of issues that our children are confronted with.
I want to know the dynamics of that family structure, that you would stand there with the man who beat your wife, who went after your wife, who shouldn't have been in the race, and you standing in front of a jail with him to introduce a piece of legislation. Huh. That's messed up. That is super messed up.
But it's also to look at who, you know, people who carry the title of Democrats, but yet they're seemingly pushing Republican agendas.
Well, you know what? It's 7:58. It's time to go. It's time to go. Irene J. Smith, thank you so much. And forgot to say the one thing, another great piece of news that came out about the voucher bills.
Voucher bills defeated.
007 is going to be an awesome year.
Double oh seven.
Irene J. Smith, thank you so much. See you next week. And looking forward to Justice for Reggie.
Yes, and the Institute is still meeting on Saturday.
But don't we have a press conference?
They have a press conference tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And Liz, I know you have an email on it.
I can't think of the exact time right now.
But there's been a 10:30. There's been a collaboration of individuals who are going to have something sent to Jeff Smith, Lord J. Nixon. Maybe there's a correlation.
Yeah, I understand.
J. Nixon about our school issue.
Excellent. That's tomorrow, 10:30 in front of the City Hall.
I believe it's in front of the old courthouse.
The old courthouse, that's right. Irene J. Smith, thank you. I'll be back. Stay with me.
All right.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. The new commander of U.S. troops in Iraq says the job ahead of him is tough and it's far from over. ABC's Linda Albin has more on General David Petraeus' first news conference.
America's top general in Iraq says military action on its own is not enough. In his first news conference since taking over, General David Petraeus says Iraqis want services as much as they want security.
As citizens feel safer, conditions will be set for the resumption and improvement of basic services. This is hugely important.
General Petraeus says he has seen some encouraging signs since the troop surge, but added it's too early to discern any significant trends, and he admitted sensational attacks inevitably will continue. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
The House Armed Services Committee asks the questions today at a hearing into problems at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. President Bush says anything besides excellent care for the wounded vets is unacceptable.
I've been to Walter Reed a lot. There's some fantastic doctors and nurses and healers, and yet we found that there was some substandard care in a part of it, in part of that organization, and we're going to correct it.
President on CNN in Espanol. Children thrown from broken windows through blinding smoke to witnesses below. It was just part of the horrific scene in one of New York City's deadliest house fires in years in the Bronx, not far from Yankee Stadium. ABC's Aaron Katursky was there.
This three-story building not far from Yankee Stadium here in the Bronx has been completely gutted. The insides, the charred insides, are stacked on the porch and on the yard in front of the home. Four families lived inside with a combined 17 children. Eight of those children are dead, along with an adult, and a number of people have been taken to a nearby hospital with injuries as a result of this fire.
That's ABC's Aaron Katursky in the Bronx, New York, at the scene of that fire. Again, we're being told now it was caused by a space heater. This is ABC News.
Hey, Ken. Picking up a prescription?
Yeah, my erosive acid reflux.
Me too. I take Protonix, pantoprazole sodium.
Does it work?
One Protonix tablet every morning helps control daytime, even nighttime, acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yep. It even helped repair acid reflux damage. And I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan. Hey, where are you going?
To call my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 888-5-REFLUX to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
We've been hearing a lot over the past few days about the conditions at Walter Reed Army Hospital. Well, now we're learning that a VA program that would have guaranteed better care for the nation's wounded vets was shelved just 2 years ago. More from ABC News Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross.
The disgraceful treatment of America's war wounded has led to calls to improve their transition from military to civilian life. But a program designed to do just that was in the works 2 years ago, until the White House put the Republican Party chairman, Jim Nicholson, in charge of the VA. Paul Sullivan worked on the program at the VA.
It was shelved. It was not acted upon by VA, and the Seamless Transition Task Force basically shut down.
When we asked Nicholson about it yesterday, he could not even recall the program.
I'm not sure I know what program you're referring to.
The VA says it is now working on the problem. I'm Brian Ross, ABC News.
And I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a 13-year-old disappeared after school on Tuesday, but no missing child alert was issued. The family of Tyra Meeks says she was in school on Tuesday, but don't know what happened to her after that. Her backpack and coat were found at another student's house, but the family there says she left their home around 5 o'clock Tuesday night. She was last seen running along Geraldine in North St. Louis. The city police department says that no alert was issued because the case doesn't meet the criteria for such an alert. Tyra was suspended from school on Tuesday, so police are looking at the case as a possible runaway. Almost 2 years after the murder of a loan clerk, police have identified two suspects. In June of 2005, two men robbed the loan machine store in Bridgeton and fatally shot 50-year-old Mary Melberg. 34-year-old Charles E. Moore has been charged with first-degree murder, first-degree robbery, and armed criminal action. Another unidentified suspect is in federal custody on unrelated offenses. Finally this hour, the Cardinals hit 5 home runs yesterday afternoon as they defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers 11-1 in a split-squad game in Vero Beach, Florida. Starter Braden Looper pitched 3 1/3 scoreless innings to pick up the win. Skip Schumacher slugged 2 of the team's round trippers, with Chris Duncan, John Rodriguez, and Edgar Gonzalez providing the rest. The Redbirds are 4-3-1 in preseason play and return to action in Jupiter this afternoon against the Minnesota Twins. Game time is 12:05. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour at 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for this 8 o'clock hour. A lot of things going on in traffic. Eastbound 70 from St. Louis Avenue through Memorial. Look for an accident. Left lane's blocked. That's near Memorial. Look for stop traffic there. Westbound 5570 from Illinois 203 into 64. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 64 from 25th into the 5570 merge. You've got stop and go traffic there as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 split into the landing. Very sluggish there this morning. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway through 55, look for stop traffic. Westbound 5570 from the 64 split on the Poplar Street Bridge. You've got slow traffic there. Stop and go to an earlier accident, actually. Westbound 70 from Poplar Street Bridge through Memorial. Look for that accident. It's been cleared into the press section, but it's still stop and go there. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain through Graham Hanley. Look for stop and go traffic. That accident's been cleared at Old Hall's Ferry, but it's still a lot of delays going on there. Eastbound 70 from Bryan through 79, look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 40 from Maryville Center through Mason. Then again from Spady, look for through McKnight, look for slowdowns there. Northbound 270 at Gravoy and Doherty Ferry, you've got slow traffic there. Westbound 44 at Bowles and 141 road construction, ride lanes closed. And eastbound 40 from Broadway through the Poplar Street Bridge, look for road construction, right lane is closed there as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. A whole lot going on. Let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny, high in the lower 50s this evening, partly cloudy, low around 40. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers in the afternoon, high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy once again, 50% chance of showers with a low in the mid-40s. Then on Saturday, cloudy in the morning with a chance of showers and partly sunny by the afternoon, high in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 32 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 35, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news or your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome to Justice for Reggie Thursday. My name is Liz Brown, and I'm in the studio with Jamala Rogers. Jamala, good morning.
Good morning.
It's a great day, isn't it?
It's a great day, and when I'm looking out of the window, the sky is clear, and I'm hoping that is the clarity that we have now post the election that, you know, there's some things that we can do.
And we've said
this over and over again on this show as it relates to a number of things, that when you have a plan and you unite the community around that plan, you get some results.
And when you get out good information, people get it. And people do the right thing.
You know, so.
And the beauty of this, I am feeling it, Jamal. I am feeling it in my core that there is an energy of empowerment that is going on out there with all of these back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back wins. We've done some amazing things. We can talk about the, you know, the elections that we've had and talk about the death penalty with a unanimous decision coming out of our Board of Aldermen and asking for a moratorium on this.
Absolutely.
That is an astounding win. And again, I think is speaking to that energy that is percolating in the city and actually across this country. I think that there is some hope going on and a hope that is leading to people's participation.
And the thing that you said this morning when you were talking about the whole school situation, the loss of hope, that is a very disempowering thing that people really don't even understand how crippling it is.
Yes.
And once that is stymied, destroyed, then you really don't have a whole lot more.
And
then
you have to dig people
out of that hole.
Exactly. And the people that are the instigators of the hopelessness, then they get to come in and do what they need to do because they know that you are powerless to fight them back.
Right. You don't even want to fight back.
There you go.
You don't even want to.
Listen, this is Justice for Reggie Thursday. We have a guest that's going to be joining us, and we have so much more to talk about. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. Stay with us.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in health care providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs. Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Welcome back to Justice for Reggie Thursday. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. And Jamala, again, we have a guest this hour.
We have a guest this hour, and I thought it was appropriate to bring this speaker on because they have really made history in New Jersey, and I think that in Missouri we can learn some lessons from them. I think we're on the right path. We're doing some of the right things, but it never hurts to look across the country and see who else is doing similar kinds of struggles, and particularly if they're victorious, what it is. And so we have today with us Abe Bonowitz, who is one of the key people in the New Jersey successful moratorium. And the reason it made history is because the other
let's let him tell the story of that. Abe Bonowitz, field manager for New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, joining us from New Jersey. Abe, good morning.
Good morning.
How
can
are
you? Hear me okay?
Can oh
hear,
yeah.
Can hear you just fine, Abe. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm getting ready to pull over on the highway here, so just wanted to make sure that connection was good.
Absolutely. And Jamala started to talk about something that was huge that came out of your organization. Jamala, ask him that question.
Well, I wanted to for you to share with the listening audience why the New Jersey moratorium was different from the other moratoriums and why now.
Well, New Jersey's moratorium, actually we passed the bill a little over a year ago in January. A year ago, it was signed by then Governor Cody. And this was the first time that a state legislature had passed and implemented a moratorium. And not only did they implement a timeout on executions, but they also created a study commission, a bipartisan study commission that looked at the issue carefully over a series of public hearings and issued their report in January 2nd of this year. And in their report, they basically recommended changing the death penalty to life without parole. That's important to know that in New Jersey, we have a range of sentencing options. You have 30 years to life for capital murder, life being 75 years, so 30 years to life or death. And the bill that's been recommended doesn't change that, judicial discretion that a judge would have. You could still have 30 years to life, but instead of or death, it's now or throw away the key. And which, of course, is not always the best option, but that's the alternative that seems to be most palatable to, you know, the right wing and to victims' families and that sort of thing.
And Abe, as I'm looking at your resume, you were the director of Citizens for the Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and it's an organization that uses tactical grassroots activism to connect people to the issue of the death penalty. Talk to us about some of the things that you had to do to get the state of New Jersey to come to this decision. Surely you all had to do some grassroots activism to get them to that point. Talk to us about some of that.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm on sabbatical from Citizens United for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, which is, I helped start that group in 1997. And in 1997, things looked a whole lot different in this country. It really did take, you know, civil disobedience and a lot of in-your-face kind of activism just to be noticed. But I have to tell you, here in New Jersey, what's been going on, and in a lot of other places too, is real, you know, quiet grassroots constituency building that's organized by legislative district so that we can talk to legislators and find out where they are on the issue and find out those that need some additional education and motivation. And, you know, the only thing that motivates politicians is money or bad press or people in the streets. And by people in the streets, you know, sometimes that means marches and demonstrations, but what it really means more than anything else is voters and people who are willing to communicate in a constructive fashion with legislators and let them know how they feel. And if legislators start to feel that mainstream people that are their voters or potentially their voters are interested in this issue and want to see a change in this issue or any issue really, that's when they're going to take notice. And you know, so what we've done here in New Jersey since 1999, just been real quiet meetings in churches and with groups like the League of Women Voters or the NAACP or any opportunity, schools, any opportunity to come in, we'll bring a speaker, a murder victim family member, or a death row survivor, or somebody that has experienced this in their own life who can share what's really going on, and then also somebody that can talk about the pragmatics of the issue. But 10, 15, 20 people at a time were educating and signing them up and putting them into the names, those that are willing, we put their names into a database that's organized by legislative district. So when it comes time that there's going to be a vote or we need to have some legislation introduced or something like that, we're able to reach out to the people who can touch the specific legislator that needs to hear from people. And that is what passed the bill in a year ago, and that's what puts us on the edge of abolition of the death penalty in New Jersey this legislative session.
And Abe, one of the things that happened in Chicago, you talked about the three things that motivate legislators: money or bad press or people in the street. Well, in Chicago, they had the bad press of innocent people on death row. Uh-huh. Did New Jersey have those types of stories coming out as well that kind of helped you in your discussions and conversations with people on the death penalty?
Absolutely. Yeah, you have wrongful convictions everywhere, and you've got racism, and you've got classism. I mean, all those things are happening everywhere. I'll mention just on the side that I'm just sitting in a rest area watching a whole bunch of guys in orange suits clean the place. We've got the DOC is working its prisoners everywhere, and yeah, that's a whole other issue. But the wrongful convictions thing. You know what happened in Illinois. I'm sure everybody's familiar with this, was that Governor Ryan almost executed the guy who was innocent, and nobody was talking about his innocence. They stayed that execution. He was 3 days away from execution, and they stayed that execution because there was a question of whether he was smart enough, whether his IQ was high enough for him to understand what was happening. And in the weeks following a journalism class, not journalists, not police or law enforcement, but students investigated that case and not only found the evidence to show that the guy didn't do it, they found the guy that did and got him to confess on videotape in a matter of weeks. So, you know, that startled Governor Ryan. And when the Chicago Tribune did a huge in-depth series of articles about everything that's wrong with Illinois' death row and death penalty system, Governor Ryan read it. And that woke him up. As a guy who was total, anti-crime, pro-law enforcement, voted for the death penalty as a legislator, and he did the right thing. And it's because he was able to see beyond the rhetoric and recognize what it's like to push the button. He had executed somebody, and what it is to have a real justice system, which he realized they did not. So that's what happened in Illinois. And luckily, New Jersey hasn't had to go that far. I think Missouri has. There's some very real questions as to whether Missouri has executed an innocent person. It may be the case. We know there's innocent people in prison, not just on death row, but throughout the prison system. And we need to take a whole different kind of look at how our legal system functions. And notice I don't say justice system. I call it a legal system because it's certainly not just.
And Abe, when you started to engage in conversations with people, you changed your tactics, or you evolved into different types of tactics to raise awareness of the problems with the death penalty. And you began these dialogues with people. What were some of the things that did you learn some things that you didn't know before?
Oh, I'm learning all the time. And, the best way to learn is to make a mistake. And I've made so many, which is why why we've been successful, because we've made so many mistakes. The most important thing, I think, is to just let people come to a decision on the issue in their own time from the angle that they need to hear it. So the most important thing was to get the discussion going, but then to listen to the people that is your audience and hear where they're coming from. You don't want to come at people with, what you said about the death penalty, if their issue is cost. And by the same token, if you're talking to a bunch of people that are in church and they're because, they are whatever religion they are, then yes, you got to talk about the pragmatics, but you also have to help them understand the morality from where they're coming from. So the most important thing you can do on this or any issue is listen and then address the concerns of the specific individual. Because you could talk to some people about the racism and the death penalty until you're blue in the face.
They will never hear it.
And it won't make a bit of difference.
It won't make a difference, and they won't hear it.
That's right. But maybe for that person, what matters more is how much money is being wasted on the death penalty that could for example, be our bill in New Jersey, we're going to take the money that we'll save from getting rid of the death penalty and put it into services for victims' families, which right now is non-existent. We're going
to... And is it, and Abe, we have to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to have a discussion with you about the victims and how they are treated in this system. Because there is a story in that, too, and it's not the story that people expect to hear. So I'd like to have that conversation with you. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We're talking to Abe Bonowitz. He is the field manager for New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. He's joining us from New Jersey. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a quick look at your traffic and your weather for this 8 o'clock hour. Eastbound 70 from St. Louis Avenue through Memorial Drive. Look for stop traffic due to an accident. Left lane's blocked. That's near Memorial Drive. Westbound 5570 from Illinois 203 to 64. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 64 from 25th through the 5570 merge. Look for stop and go traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 split all the way into the landing is stop and go. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway through 5570. Look for some stop traffic due to earlier accidents and incidents going on there. Westbound 5570 from the 64 split onto the PSB, stop and go due to an earlier accident as well. Westbound 70 at the Poplar Street Bridge and Memorial, that accident's been cleared in the depressed section. You can still expect stop and go traffic. Westbound 40 from McCausland through Hanley, look for stop and go traffic there. Westbound 270 from 367 through West Florissant, look for some delays as well. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for slowdowns. Eastbound 40 between Maryville Center and Mason, then again from Spady through McKnight, look for slowdowns as well. Northbound 270 is slow on either side of 44, and eastbound 40 between Broadway and Poplar Street Bridge. Road construction has right lane closed. Westbound 44 between Bowles and 141, look for road construction having some delays there as the right lane's closed there as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Mostly sunny today, high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 44. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers in the afternoon with a high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. Continued chance for showers with a low in the mid-40s. Then on Saturday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny throughout the day, a high in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920. WGNU, we have 32 degrees, Lambert Fields reporting 36, under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and Jamala Rogers, and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hey, St. Louis, this is Sir Sax inviting you to a show called the Gospel Skate Party every Friday night at 10 p.m. It's a program in which I bring you the best in Christian rap, righteous R&G, a taste of that holy hip-hop, etc., etc. It's heard right here on WGNU 920 on your AM dial. Don't forget, the Gospel Skate Party every Friday at 10 p.m. Get your skates on and skate with Sir Sax.
Hey, St. Louis. This is Syl Wilson. Be sure and tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for The Real Deal with Syl.
Excellent.
We'll talk about what I want to talk about, then we can talk about what you want to talk about, then we can talk about what I want to talk about again. So be sure and tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for The Real Deal with Syl. See you then.
Looking for time made just for you? Wanting to hear from some young people who are cool and well-informed? Have some questions adults just can't seem to answer? There is a place for you on WGNU Radio. Tune in Sunday nights at 5:30. You'll hear teens talk about stuff teens understand. Find out about the latest in music, sports, and other issues that matter. Finally, a talk show for teens, about teens, by teens on 9:20 a.m. 5:30 Sunday nights. Sponsored by the St. Charles Luanga Center.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
welcome back. Welcome back. It's Thursday, and it's time for Justice for Reggie. And I'm here with Jamala Rogers, and we have a guest on the line. And before we get to our guest, I'd like to thank once again the Church of God in Christ, Bishop Ward, for their unyielding, I mean, for their consistent support of this show and financial support of this show. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without your support. And our guest this hour is A. Bonowitz. He is the field manager for New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and he is joining us from New Jersey. Abe, I asked you a question on the way out about how the victims of murder's families, the challenges they face in this, as you describe this legal system.
Well, you know, it's probably one of the worst things imaginable to lose a loved one to violence and to not know what happened, to not know what they went through, or even to have to imagine what they went through. And, you know, the shocking thing is that, you know, politicians in states where they use the death penalty like to come out and say, well, you know, that's why we have the death penalty, so these victims' families can have some closure. And of course, anybody that's looked at the issue seriously understands that there's no such thing as closure, especially if you know from experience. Yeah, you never are going to get your loved one back, and there's always going to be that empty chair at the table when the family all gets together. Nothing is going to bring you any kind of closure, but what we can do, what government can do and should do, is actually assist in a healing process. And that means there ought to be some resources for counseling. If a family has lost a loved one to a wage earner, there ought to be some help, at least for a period of time, to so that the family doesn't lose their home that they're living in, or, you know, so they can eat and not have to worry about basic sustenance while they deal with the trauma of losing their loved one. That's, I think, a key thing that is practically non-existent in our communities across the country.
And for all of the conversations that are had by prosecuting attorneys' offices about the victims, we're out there for the victims. I've talked to many people, many victims of these types of crimes, and they talk about the abandonment that they feel, and almost some of them even use the word use. We feel like the prosecutor's office uses us to get their conviction, and then once they're done with us, they're done with us.
Well, that's just it. And if you are a victim family member that says, I don't support the death penalty, I'm happy that you caught this person, I want to see them held accountable, I want to see them put in prison for a long time, maybe they might want to see him dead. But if you agree, if you say, I don't want to see an execution, I just want to see him imprisoned, then you lose that communication with the prosecutor's office. They no longer have any use for you because they need you in court crying and upset, wanting to see that vengeance. Now, you know, I actually, before I came to New Jersey, I was organizing in Florida, and I had the opportunity to meet with Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who is one of those people, who's now the ex-governor there, he's one of those people who, every time there's an execution, will come out and say, this is for the victims' families. And the problem, of course, I said to Jeb Bush is, well, if it's true, if you hold up the death penalty as a commodity for victims' families, why are you using it so infrequently? Mm. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, of all the thousands of murders that occur in this state, you know, where they catch somebody, which is only about half the time, where they seek the death penalty, which is in a very small percentage of all murders, where they actually, of all the people where they can seek the death penalty and they do seek the death penalty, where they actually get a death sentence, you're talking about fewer than 2%, 2 to 3%, depending on the state, of the people who are eligible for a death sentence actually get one. And of the people who actually get a death sentence, who stay on death row either to the point of dying on death row or being actually executed, fewer than 1% of the people who commit murder, who are caught, who are eligible for the death penalty, actually die on death row or are killed by the state. So if it's true that the death penalty is a commodity for victims' families and we're using it less than 1% of the time, what you're really saying to 99% of victims' families is your loved one wasn't valuable enough. And Governor Bush's response to me was, well, we can't have equal justice for everyone. Uh-huh. And, of course, I kind of laughed because carved into the face of the United States building, words, equal justice under law.
Right. He must have forgotten that part.
And it was astounding to me, but he had never thought about it in that way. And I could see like a little switch going on because it never – people just don't think about it that way.
They don't think it through. Yeah. They just don't. They don't think it through.
I mean, it's that's so right. politically it's expedient that you embrace it and then run with it. And if it gets you votes, then that reinforces the view.
That's right. Well, here's the important thing here in New Jersey. With the study commission that I talked about earlier. And by the way, anybody who wants to can look at the transcripts of these study commissions and read the report. There's a link to it from our webpage at www.njadp.org. Right at the top is a box that says click here to get to the report. I encourage people to take a look at this. We had a number of murder victim family members come and testify at the, and when I say a number, I mean more than a dozen murder victim family members came and testified, many of whom support the idea of the death penalty. Actually, one woman came and testified that her mother was murdered. They caught the guy. He did get a death sentence. She was like 7 or 8 years old when this murder happened, and she's now in her late 20s. The guy still hasn't been executed, and she testified that, you know, if they had executed him right away, then maybe I would feel relief, but I would not recommend to anybody that they have the death penalty in their case because of what it put me through as a victim's family. Mm. Because what happens is, that, you know, when you get a life, you know, a sentence that's not the death penalty, it's over. Maybe there's an appeal, but it's very rarely is a conviction overturned, but you're done. 1-2 years after the person's caught, you're done. If there's a death sentence, every time it comes up for an appeal, every time something happens, it's in the newspaper, the media is there coming to want to see you cry and be angry, and it's like ripping that scab off the wound. Each time for 10, 15, 20 years sometimes. Here in New Jersey, we haven't had an execution since 1963. And some of the people that are the most vocal supporters of the death penalty are, you know, a couple of murder victims, family members that, you know, are, you could see the pain in their face. Because they believe they've been sold this bill of goods that when the guy's dead, they're going to feel better. And we know from the vast majority of victims' families that came and testified at the commission and those that we know in other instances that it's more killing is going to hurt and is going to help anybody. And what victims' families really want is they want to know what happened to their loved one. They would love to hear an apology, and they want to know that the person that did this is not going to be able to do it again to somebody else's family. You know, some victims' families come to forgiveness. Some believe in the concept of reconciliation, but most are never going to get that state-sponsored vengeance of an execution. So what we have to do is look at the next best alternative, and that is here in New Jersey, what we're looking at is imprisonment, but also services and funds available to support the families of people who've been murdered so that they can move on and begin a healing process faster than the way it is when you suggest that an execution will help.
And, A, can you tell us about the legislature, what it looked like when you all won the victory? I know that on the Senate side you had a bipartisan introduction of the bill, but what does you all...
Our bill, the moratorium bill that passed last year, was bipartisan on both sides and overwhelmingly supported on both in the Assembly and in the Senate. Again, bipartisan support. We had about... I think 40% of the Republicans supported it. Not all the Democrats. The Democrat actually got an African-American lawyer, physician, who actually represents my district. He's one of the most ardent supporters of the death penalty, which is kind of astounding if you think about it.
It doesn't take long to have to think about it.
He's a lawyer and he's a physician. He should know better. But the bottom line is that you know, we had overwhelming support and bipartisan support on both sides. And the reason that it's bipartisan is because people recognize that as a public policy, morally, economically, socially, the death penalty fails us. It doesn't do what they say it's going to do. It wastes a tremendous amount of money. It prolongs the pain of victims' families, and it risks the execution of an innocent person. And we've been able to convey that, again, not through protesting in the streets, but through finding the people who know legislators personally and talking to them and getting them to talk to their friends, the legislators, and also through being able to get handwritten letters from constituents to the legislators. Nothing like a handwritten letter. Two or three sentences is all it takes. But, you know, online petitions are a waste of time.
And we got
petitions, okay.
And Abe, we have to take a break.
No problem.
We're taking a break. I'm talking to Abe Bonowitz, field manager, New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, joining us from New Jersey. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. Stay with us. I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Hello, my friend. This is Minister Ernest Greenlee inviting you to join me for good gospel music and church news you can use every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 12 noon. The Holy Ghost take us to a higher level every week. So join me, Minister Ernest Greenlee, and receive a double portion every Saturday morning at 10:30 here on 920 WGNU.
Tune in every Thursday at noon till 1 p.m. on WGNU 920 on the AM dial. You can talk to Dr. Walker and her guests weekly to discuss health and medical issues. Nurse Wanda always has information that you won't want to miss. Every show is different, and talking to Dr. Walker is always fun. Call 314-454-0400. You can also listen to Dr. Walker's Medical Hour on the Internet. Log on to WGNU.net. Click on Listen Live.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Thursday. My name is Liz Brown. I'm sitting in the studio with Jamala Rogers and our guest on the line joining us from New Jersey at a rest stop actually in New Jersey on his way. Elsewhere we have Abe Bonowitz, field manager of New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. And Abe, I'd like to take a caller or two if you don't mind.
Sure.
Dimitri, you have a question for my guest, Abe Bonowitz?
Good morning, Liz. Good morning, Jamala.
Good morning.
Yes, I have a question, and I think it's a pretty far-out question, but I'd like to ask Mr. Bonowitz this question. How close are we to publicly televised executions? And the reason I say that, we saw Saddam Hussein executed, and I wonder what effect this would have on the public and their attitude towards the moratorium, national moratorium on all executions. I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Thank you, Dimitri.
About the question being how close we are to publicly televised executions, I don't see it happening. And in part, I don't see it happening because we saw what happened with, you know, when the footage of Saddam Hussein's killing got put out on the internet. You know, you had people like George Bush saying how unfortunate it was. And I don't think he was talking about how unfortunate it was that Saddam was killed. He was talking about how unfortunate it was that it was exposed and how morally bankrupt the death penalty is. And that's the reality. If you look in around this country right now, we've got freezes on executions happening, not because of anybody's questioning whether it's right to execute, but because they're questioning whether we can do a lethal injection properly. And let's keep in mind that lethal injection was actually invented by the personal physician of Adolf Hitler. But what we're doing now, and the reason that we use that instead of the gas chamber or firing squad or hanging or electrocution in this state, is because it makes it easier on the witnesses and maybe to some degree also on the prison workers. It appears that a person's just gone to sleep. But now what's come out most recently is the fact that the first chemical that they use is supposed to paralyze you so that you can't exhibit the pain that is happening if you're not fully sedated when the more painful chemicals that go in and shut down your lungs and stop your heart. Those are very painful chemicals and when we fail to either put the needles in properly, as happened in Florida in December, or when the sedation begins to wear off before the killing chemicals go in, then it's ugly and it's painful to watch. And of course, you know, a lot of people, who cares how painful it is for the murderer? But yeah, the bottom line is that's why they use lethal injection instead of these other forms, to make it easier on the witnesses. And therefore, we're not going to be seeing it televised. I believe that if we did televise it, then it would be a circus for some people and a huge embarrassment for most, and that would lead to faster abolition. But they've moved it behind the prison walls for a reason, and I don't see that changing.
And, Abe, you'll be happy to know that just yesterday we found out that we have a hearing on Tuesday for our moratorium bill that was introduced by Representative Bill Deacon, who is a Republican in the House. And so we are very ecstatic about that, because this is one of the first times I think that the bill has gotten this far, that, you know, you get a hearing, because if you don't get a hearing, you're pretty much dead in the water. So we have that, and we'll be mobilizing people to get there for House Bill 445.
That's
next Tuesday at noon in Jefferson City. And so hopefully we'll be able to report some good stuff to you at the end of this legislative session.
Well, that'd be great. And, you know, it's important for people to come out and be present at those things. But what's also important is that, you know, you go and take careful note of who votes how and who says what. And then, you know, I wouldn't expect the bill to pass this year, but what it does, it tells you who you need to work on. And then the real trick is organizing in their legislative district quietly, carefully, politely, and building the middle-of-the-road voters and getting those people, as I was saying before the last break, to communicate with a handwritten letter and follow it up with a phone call and then be ready to do it again each time something happens, and pay attention, and, you know, and hopefully the state organization there and the people organizing will be able to build the resources to be able to properly staff an organization that can keep that database going and remind people when it's time to talk to their legislators again. You know, careful work over 4 or 5 years is what's going to do it, but it can be done and it will be done.
Well, to that end, on the Justice for Reggie website, we do have the committee that's hearing that bill and the committee members and their particular email and phone numbers. And we are encouraging people to contact either the head of that, the chair of that committee, or their own legislators to say, I want you to support House Bill 445. And so that information is up on the website, www.justiceforreggie.com.
And, Abe, we have just a few more minutes here. Can you see the influence of what you're doing in New Jersey spread to some of the surrounding states on the East Coast? How is the East Coast doing with respect to the moratorium on the death penalty or even the abolition of the death penalty?
Well, it's not just the East Coast. It's all over. They passed the bill in the Senate in Montana. 2 weeks ago to abolish the death penalty, and several of the people who submitted research or testified, including the former warden of New Jersey State Prison at Trenton, were among the people that went out to Montana to testify there and let them know what's happening. We submitted information down to Florida when they were looking at their lethal injection process in the last few weeks. In Maryland, actually, the Baltimore Sun, I think it was, ran as an opinion piece the dissent, the one dissenting vote for the New Jersey Study Commission report. The one guy who voted against it is actually the author of the bill in 1982, and they ran a part of his dissenting comments. So people are watching New Jersey from all over the country and really all over the world. And also what's happening is there's among politicians a great deal of curiosity because of the bipartisan nature of the voting and the sponsorship, not just the voting, but the co-sponsorship of this bill is bipartisan. So people are looking at it now, legislators, as a public policy measure, not as a stepping stone to getting elected.
Well, one of the things that we push here in Missouri, and particularly with the Reggie Clemens case, is that the moratorium gives buy some time for those people who are trying to prove their innocence. And so once you've killed somebody, that's the end of that. You know, it doesn't help to find out later that, oops, that was the wrong person. So, excuse me, there's going to be a mailing party at the next campaign meeting for Reggie Clemens that we'll send out cards to those supporters letting them know the House bill numbers and who to call and that kind of thing. So that's Monday at 7 p.m. at the Rowan Community Center.
And let me get to another caller here. You're on the Justice for Reggie. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Outstanding.
Great. My name is Paree, and I just want to thank you all for what you're doing. And I have a question for you all. I need to know, how can I go about getting the prison location where Reggie Clemens is?
Okay, thank you for that question.
Thank you.
Reggie's at Potosi Center, and like Abe, I hesitate to say correctional or justice, but he's at the Potosi Correctional Center in Potosi. And one of the things that we do, I mean, it's fine for people to write, but people, it's difficult for Reggie to write back because those are stamps. And it used to be in the old days you can put stamps in a letter for them, but now the policy is that the prisoners have to buy from the commissary. And so inmates don't have that kind of money, and people want to write, and we want people, him to hear from people, but it's very frustrating for him not to be able to write people back. So, so you can, you know, find out Potosi Correctional Center's address.
And in terms of visiting, don't you have to be on his list?
Yeah, you do have to be on his list, mm-hmm. And he's only allowed so many people per month on the list. And so I would just ask people to be mindful of that. He can't write the number of people that write him back just because it's a financial issue.
And, Abe, we only have a few.
Can I just jump in and say how important it is to communicate to prisoners? I mean, Reggie, it sounds like he's got a great support network out there, but there's probably dozens of other people on death row there in Missouri and thousands across the country who really would appreciate having a pen pal, somebody to communicate with them once in a while. And you know, you can just put death row pen pal in on the and the search engine on the internet, and you'll find a couple of sites that might link you up. But you know, for those who are inclined, supporting a prisoner is very important work. And also great education. It's one of the things that helped me come to understand a lot about the system was in communicating and visiting with people in prison and on death row, and I encourage people to do that. And no matter how you stand on the issue of the death penalty, you know, if you're Christian, you're called to visit the prisoners, and even if you're not, it's the right thing to do and an important thing to do. Innocent or guilty, if you're in prison, you need to have some outside connection. I urge that kind of behavior.
And, Abe, we just need a contact in terms of your organization. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Well, find out more about New Jersey's stuff with the njadp.org, and also look at cuadp.org is the webpage of the group I started, cuadp.org. And for general information, probably the best site out there is deathpenaltyinfo.org. Deathpenaltyinfo.org.
A. Bonowitz, Field Manager, New Jerseyans for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you,
Abe. Thank you for your work. Keep at it. Call back anytime.
All right. Take care now. Any announcements?
Well, the only thing I'd like to announce, we've been talking about Know Your Rights on this show, and there's going to be a Know Your Rights workshop Saturday at 1 o'clock at Fifth Baptist Church, because we really need to, particularly before the summer months come, to educate people on their rights and what to do when they are confronted in a threatening situation with police officers. And so Know Your Rights workshop Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. at Fifth Baptist Church, 3736 Natural Bridge.
Thank you so much, Jamala. I will see you same time, same place next week.
Exactly.
Okay, and I'll be back. Stay with me.
Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. A New York nightmare. Authorities in New York City say a space heater caused a deadly overnight fire in the Bronx.
As you look at this three-story building here in the Bronx, right near Yankee Stadium, you can't see any fire escapes, and so that complicated rescue efforts. Eyewitnesses say people inside were tossing children out the window to rescuers down below. Eight children ended up dead, along with one adult, and a number of people were taken to the hospital with injuries.
ABC's Aaron Katursky. This time it's the House Armed Services Committee's turn to ask the questions. ABC's Vic Ratner has more on this fourth day of hearings into the conditions at Walter Reed Army Hospital.
Keeping up the pressure. It's the fourth day in a row that Army officials are facing congressional critics. General Kevin Kiley, the Surgeon General, has apologized several times for allowing shoddy conditions at Walter Reed Army Hospital. Now his boss, Chief of Staff General Peter Schoomaker, adds a gruff-voiced threat.
The Surgeon General's going to fix this, or he'll be held additionally accountable as far as I'm concerned.
Congress next plans hearings on what happens to those injured soldiers after they leave the military. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
The new commander of U.S. troops in Iraq says he knows the job is far from over. General David Petraeus held his first news conference today, says the key to success is for the Iraqis to put aside their sectarian conflicts.
Putting Iraq above personal and sectarian agendas will be critical as Iraqi leaders and the Iraqi people grapple with some very tough issues in the months ahead.
The question remains, though, just how much longer will the troops be in Iraq? Today, House Democrats are expected to unveil a plan that calls for U.S. forces to leave Iraq by December of 2008, sooner if the Iraqi government doesn't step up. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow is up 79 points in early going, and the NASDAQ is ahead 18 points. This is ABC News.
Hey, Ken. Picking up a prescription?
Yeah, my erosive acid reflux.
Me too. I take Protonix, pantoprazole sodium.
Does it work?
One Protonix tablet every morning helps control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yep. It even helped repair acid reflux damage, and I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan. Hey, where are you going?
To call my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. go to ProtonicSavings.com or call 888-5-REFLUX to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
The daughter of actor Johnny Depp has been hospitalized in London, where he's preparing to shoot a new film. More from ABC's Linda Elvin.
Actor Johnny Depp is reportedly keeping an around-the-clock vigil at the bedside of his little girl at an unnamed hospital here in the UK. The Mirror newspaper says it knows the medical condition of 7-year-old Lily Rose, but is refusing to say out of respect for the family's privacy. According to the paper, a hospital source says the 43-year-old Pirates of the Caribbean star and his partner Vanessa Paradis have barely left the child's side since she became ill. Depp often takes his family with him when he's filming. The couple also have a 4-year-old son, John Jack. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
Oops. The Census Bureau says it mistakenly posted personal information from more than 300 households on a public internet site. The data included names, addresses, phone numbers, birth dates, and even family income, but no social security numbers, and that none of the information was misused. Households in 9 states and the District of Columbia were affected. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a teacher has been suspended for allegedly burning a student. 18-year-old Tony LaRue suffered second-degree burns while attending a cosmology class at North County Tech in Florissant. Tony says she was warming up a hair curling iron when the female teacher poked her with it several times. Tony says she was treated by the school nurse and sent home. A school district spokesperson says that police have been notified of the incident, and Tony's mother says she plans to seek charges. The federal government has sued Walgreens Company, alleging widespread racial bias. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has alleged that the company, based in Deerfield, Illinois, makes decisions about employee assignment and promotion based on race. Several of the complaints came from current and former employees in the St. Louis area. Walgreens released a statement saying they are committed to fairness, diversity, and opportunity, and that they are saddened and disappointed by the EEOC action. Finally this hour, the Blues continue their homestand tonight when they host the Dallas Stars at Scott Trade Center. The Note are coming off a 4-2 loss to the Calgary Flames on Tuesday night that snapped a 4-game winning streak at home. They have not lost back-to-back home games since late January. The team is 28-28-10 on the season and in third place in the Western Conference Central Division. Game time is 7 o'clock. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Eastbound 44 between Southwest and Hampton. Look for an accident cleared. That's on the ramp to Hampton. Expect some delays. Northbound 170 between 40 and Brentwood Boulevard. Look for road construction. Left lane's closed. Northbound 270 at Gravel Lane, Doherty Ferry. You can expect some slow traffic around the 44 interchange. Westbound 40 between 270 and Mason. Look for one lane closed and heavy traffic as a result. Eastbound 40 between Broadway and Poplar Street Bridge. Road construction, right lane's closed. Westbound 44 between, you've got the right lane closed between Bowles and 141, causing some slowdowns there. Eastbound 44 at 141. Look for right lane's closed there. Northbound 270 at Gravelway and 44. Road construction, right lane's closed. Westbound 5570 into the Poplar Street Bridge. You can expect no delays. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well from mid-span on in. Eastbound 40 between the Boone Bridge all the way through Clarkson Valley is looking good. Eastbound 70 from K through 79. Look for no delays. And then again from just west of 270 all the way to St. Charles Rock Road is looking good. Northbound 270 at the Rock Road is moving well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly sunny, high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 40. Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers in the afternoon with a high in the lower 60s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers with a low in the mid-40s. And Saturday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then partly cloudy through the afternoon with a high in the upper 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 33 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 36, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up. Get up. Get to me. We have much to talk about. And every day there is something new and something different. But what is interesting, from my observation, from my vantage point, is that many of the things, if not most of the things, if not all of these things, are interconnected. That there isn't really 6 degrees of separation between homelessness and the stock market. They're not. It's all interconnected. And while they got some, according to the ability of the attention span of the American public, it got some. This particular story got some heat last week. What happened in China with their stock market? And what happened here as a result of what happened in China? And what happened in Europe and here as a result of what happened in China? And the question that exists out there is, how on earth would something that happened in China have such a huge impact on what's happening here? And we're going to talk about that with the editor of China Stock Digest, Jim Tripon. He's joining us from Houston, Texas. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you're balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost, no obligation. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in every Friday at 5:15 for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to, and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage from your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons at 5:15 on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I'm having a conversation with the editor of China Stock Digest, joining us from Houston, Texas, Jim Tripon, to talk about the big sell-off. What happened in China just last week. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Very good. Take us back a few days, Jim. Take us back to what happened in this sell-off in China last week.
Sure. Well, what happened was a week ago, Monday, the Chinese markets fell by 9% in one day. I mean, it was a huge sell-off in their stock market. And, of course, a lot of people here might think that, you know, that's not a big deal that something happened in that far away. But what happened was it caused the U.S. markets to go down, the biggest decline we've had since the 9/11 attacks in one day. And so obviously we're starting to get pretty well connected with what's going on in the rest of the world.
And how does the China's market compare to the U.S. market? Because they're both run completely differently.
They are completely different. But, you know, here's the connection. Over the last 15 years, we've seen the middle class kind of start, well, evaporate to a large degree in the United States as those jobs that used to be here where we would manufacture things got exported to Asia and other countries. And so now the American public is pretty much addicted to these cheap consumer products that are manufactured by people that make a dollar a day in labor wages. And so if their economy stumbles, then it means that those products may all of a sudden become more expensive in the United States, or they may have to get produced in other countries that have higher labor rates, which, you know, is great for the worker, but of course, it'll affect our entire economy here.
But in terms of the way that the China stock market runs, it's so different from the United States. And that to me is the question of how could a market that doesn't really run like our market run have that kind of impact on us?
Well, see, they want to be like us, though, Liz, and that's the thing. I mean, that if you looked at what's happened over the last, 20 years ago, what happened was they decided they were going to scrap having a government-run economy and go to capitalism, which seems like the weirdest marriage in the world that, you know, the communists that have always controlled everything all of a sudden want to have a capitalist system. But they adopted that 20 years ago. And over the last 15 years, they've changed their markets. They have a stock market. The biggest stock market for China, of course, has been around a long time, and that's in Hong Kong. But they have one in Shanghai as well, and then also in a little city called Shenzhen. And all of these markets are trying to model what we have here in the States, and they're doing just huge amounts of trade and revisions in their regulations to look like us. And as that happens, more Westerners, more Americans, more bankers and 401k plans are investing in the Chinese markets, and that's where you're seeing the connection.
But also, don't we have something going on in China in terms of the governmental? They say they want to be like us, but the fact of the matter is that the government still has a huge role in all of the businesses that are on the stock exchange in China.
That's very true, Liz. I mean, what's going on in China? If you look at their country for many years, for decades, everything was owned by the government. And so, of course, the largest industries in the country, the energy companies, the gas filling stations, the electric utility generators, anything you can imagine that would be a large infrastructure type of industry in that country was owned by the Chinese government. Now, what they've been doing is they've started to spin those off into the private sector. They've started to privatize. But they still have a big stake in a lot of these companies. And, yes, they still have a lot of influence on all of these industries.
So if that government whispers about we're going to raise taxes, then their market is going to be impacted hugely by that.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, what they announced last week that a lot of people point to as the reason why the market declined was they decided they were going to raise the deposit rates for borrowing against their banks or for borrowing against investing in the stock market. So, in other words, if an investor was going to borrow money to buy stocks, they'd have to put up more money than they used to have to put up, and that sent kind of a panic wave through their stock market.
Do you think, Jim, that there has been enough attention focused on the significance of our response, our country's response to this sell-off, buy-off in China?
No, absolutely there has not been enough focus on it. I tell you, a lot of the big brokerage firms basically have swept it under the rug, saying, oh, there's nothing to worry about, there's no issue here. And yet, you know, after it happened, we had like 5 days in a row the market went down. And finally we got a little bit of a break the other day where we're starting to show some signs of life. But I think that we're going to have a big long-term issue here in our relation with China and how it's going to affect the pocketbooks of your listeners and all Americans, really.
Well, talk to us in real terms about how that impacts regular Joes and Janes out here. How does what happened to our stock market with that crash last week on Monday, how does that affect the average Joe and Jane out here?
Well, I mean, if the average Joe and Jane has a retirement account or a 401k account or an IRA account, when they get their statement, you know, their 401k may look more like a 201k. It may look like half the money's there when they get their next statement. Of course, the other thing is, and you see this throughout the entire economy, when you go to fill up your car, next time you go to fill it up, I mean, notice the fact that you're paying a lot of money to fill up that car, a lot more than you used to pay 5 years ago. And part of that also has to do with China, because, see, China now is the world's second largest new car market, second only to Detroit, as far as the new number of cars produced. China is rapidly becoming, you know, a big automobile economy. And, of course, as that happens, you're going to see gas prices rise. So, I mean, those two things that would affect any one of your listeners. Every time they go fill up, you know, they say, gee, thanks, China. my gasoline would be about a gallon less if you weren't using so much oil.
So what's the answer?
Well, the answer is that it's a change. It's a change in the economy. It's a change in the world power structure. And I think that ultimately the answer is that all of us as Americans need to first acknowledge what's going on and come up with some kind of strategy to deal with it. The reason we created the China Stock Digest was so that we didn't get left behind when China becomes the world's largest economy. We wanted to figure out, okay, if this is a trend that's going to happen and we can't change that it's going to happen, how do we participate in it so we don't get run over by the trend, but we get to ride that wave and benefit from it?
So when this impacted our economy like this, our stock market, Did it also impact stock markets all across the world?
Absolutely. Yeah, it dominoed all throughout the world. What happened was Shanghai fell first. It dominoed to Hong Kong. It went to Japan. It went to India. It went to South Korea, Australia. It went over to us, and then it went all through Europe. So, yeah, it's affected the entire world.
So when you talked about a few minutes ago that it's being swept under the rug, why?
Well, because brokerage firms don't want their customers to panic, because if people start to panic, they're going to drive the prices down even more. I mean, the way the stock market works is that, you know, prices are established by how many people are wanting to sell and how many people are wanting to buy. And so if you have more buyers than sellers, the stock prices go up. But if you have more sellers than buyers, which is what happened over the last week, you know, prices can fall, and they can fall pretty hard, and they can fall pretty quickly. And so, obviously, the brokerage firms don't want to see people panic and just dump everything and watch the whole market crash. Because we had a pullback, and it was a hard pullback. It was about a 4% drop. But, you know, it could get worse. You know, it could go to 10, 15, 20%, and nobody wants to talk about that.
Well, in terms of what can be done or what should be done legislatively, should our legislators out there be looking for legislation that makes it more difficult for companies to get that cheap those cheap products from China? Is that an answer? Is that a solution?
Well, you know, that's a tough question, Liz, and it's one that I've been struggling with myself for a number of years, because I've watched. You know, when you go to China, and I don't know if you've ever spent much time there, but when I go to China and I land in Beijing, because you can fly nonstop now from New York to Beijing, and when I land in Beijing, last time I went to Beijing, I counted out the window of the airplane. There were 47 construction cranes surrounding the airport for new building construction.
And wow.
They say the construction crane is the national bird of China.
Wow.
And all those cranes are building manufacturing plants and office buildings. And so, on one side, I look at that and I say, wow, what an opportunity. But the other part of me says, you know, this is really tragic, because all these jobs, all these manufacturing plants, these are jobs that used to be done by people in St. Louis. These are jobs that used to be done by people in Indiana. These are jobs that used to be done by people in Detroit or Chicago. And guess what? They've moved. I mean, we sold them the equipment. We packed up the factories and shipped them over there.
And we also created legislation to allow that to happen.
You better believe it. And, you know, what was the sales pitch that you know, Bush 1 and Bush 2 both said when they were signing some of these trade deals? It was, oh, you know, we're going to get rid of these cheap jobs, and we're going to keep the good jobs here in the United States, these high-dollar jobs.
How'd that work out for us?
Yeah, not at all. It didn't work out for us at all, because basically what happened was we exported the good jobs, the bad jobs, and we just exported
all the jobs.
That's right. And so, you know, as a American who loves my country and loves to see us have a vibrant society where everyone has opportunity to move forward, it breaks my heart to see this happen, because I really worry, what's going to happen for our children? What's going to happen for our children's children if we're a country that doesn't make anything? I mean, we can get by with that for a while by running up the credit cards. We can get by with that.
And let's talk about that for a second, Jim, because, yeah, okay, the jobs went, the good jobs went, the ability to have businesses in our communities and country went, but the debt stayed behind. We're still buying, even though there aren't any jobs to pay for this stuff.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the funny thing about that, Liz, one of the reasons we're able to do that is that there's a big wealth shift going on right now as the World War II generation passes away and leaves inheritance to their kids and grandkids, okay? But that's only going to last so long. I mean, you know, that party can go on until you run out of money, and then all of a sudden the lights come on. and then we've got one heck of a mess. So, yeah, I really do think that there are some things legislatively that could be done.
Well, talk to us about some of those.
Well, I mean, for one thing, we need to reexamine what the trade tariffs are when products come in here. You know, a lot of people believe that goods, not just from China, but from all over the world, come in the United States using artificially low costs for raw materials, using artificially low costs for labor. And that puts American companies, American business owners, at a huge disadvantage, because they're not playing on a level playing field.
Explain that.
Well,
break that down a little more.
Okay, sure. Well, let's say that you buy, you buy a piece of furniture that's made in another country. If the government is subsidizing the manufacturer of that piece of furniture, then when it gets sold into the United States, the people that are selling it to us are really not selling it for the true cost. Why? Because that government may be subsidizing part of the harvesting of the wood. That government may be subsidizing part of the cost of those labors that are being done. So the government may be giving special tax abatements so that they're not paying any tax on their earnings. Whereas if you are a furniture manufacturer here in North Carolina, for example, you know, you have to pay fair market value for the lumber that goes into that furniture. You have to pay a worker a wage, and you have to pay Social Security tax on them, and you may be providing health benefits. You may be providing a pension plan or a 401k plan, none of which is being offered in that other country. And so when those goods come in the United States, they're really not playing on a level playing field. And so if you're a small business owner with the corner, you know, furniture store, how are you going to compete? And the answer is more and more that you're not competing. And that's why we're seeing that small businesses shutter up and they, you know, what's moving in, the Walmarts are moving in. And we're seeing that the small manufacturing plants that used to be here that were all over our country have closed.
And we're going to continue this conversation with Jim Trippon. He's the editor of China Stock Digest, joining us from Houston, Texas. We're talking about the big China stock market sell-off that happened last week and its impact on us. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My conversation this hour is with the editor of China Stock Digest, joining us from Houston, Texas, Jim Trippon. Jim, our Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson, said that the global economy is as strong as he has ever seen and that reforms in China will help lessen market volatility. What is he talking about?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, the world today, you've got more people that can control their own destiny than we've ever had in any point in our history. You know, if you go back 40 years ago, the people in China, the people in the former Soviet Union, they had no control over their destiny. I mean, they were in a state-run situation, and if somebody told them to jump, they had to jump. I mean, they couldn't own anything. They couldn't control anything. And so in that sense, yes, the world is a much better place today than it was at that time. But the other side of the – and certainly China wants to be a world power player. In fact, really what China wants is what's going to probably happen based on what everything we see, and that is that China's going to have the world's largest economy within 10 years. And when they have the world's largest economy, they're also going to probably have the world's most powerful military, and they're going to control a lot more than they control today. But, you know, the issue that I have is not just are they bringing stability to the markets – My issue is, what is it meaning to the American citizen? What is it meaning to the person who wants to have a future for themselves and for their kids? What does it mean for people that work hard at their job and want to be able to retire someday? And when you look at that, it is pretty worrisome when you see that we're becoming a country that doesn't manufacture anything anymore, that we're becoming increasingly dependent on other countries because we can't produce things ourselves. And if we have a strategy to deal with that, that's great, and that's what we're trying to do at the China Stock Digest. But if there's no strategy to deal with that, really, you know, it's it's not a happy situation.
But what can the Treasury Secretary do? What can he do to address this?
Well, I mean, they've tried to do some things, but only half-heartedly. I mean, one thing they've tried to deal with is they've tried to deal with the exchange rates between the U.S. and China, saying that the Chinese government is artificially keeping their exchange rate low so that they can more easily export their products to the United States and the rest of the world, and that's probably true, but they really haven't done much about it.
The fact that the Treasury Secretary is saying things like markets very, very seldom move in a straight line, you're always going to have volatility, well, then is he saying that he wasn't tripping on the fact that the market dropped as hard as it did, and last time it did that was 9/11?
Yeah, that's basically the situation. He's handing us a cookie and patting us on the head and said, don't worry about it.
And that's the Treasury Secretary.
Right. And, I'm sorry, but, you know, when I see my retirement account drop 4% in, like, 3 days, I'm going to get worried about that. That's my you know, kids' college education. That's my grandkids' future. I'm going to be worried about that. And anybody should be worked up about that, of course.
So what do you see, and we were talking a little bit earlier about the political solutions to this, do you see any kind of conversations, rumblings about...
Nothing. Liz, there's nothing going on. Basically, the political power structure in the United States made their deal when they signed some of these trade agreements years ago, and they've done nothing since. And so the American worker, as far as I'm concerned, is out there kind of fending for themselves. And the same is true for the American investor.
And you mentioned that China in 10 years is set to be the world's largest economy. What does that mean for me, for us out here?
Well,
if because we are the largest, right?
We are the largest now, yeah.
And if that shift changes, does that mean that we're going to start measuring money in their financial coin of the realm?
Right. I mean, their currency is called the yuan or the RMB.
The yuan. So we're going to start measuring it in the yuan?
Yeah. Well, who knows? I mean, I think what you're going to see is, and it's kind of a progression that we saw with Japan. I mean, if we're looking at the real big picture, what's going on here? If you remember after World War II, and I'm old enough to remember the 1960s where, you know, you could go into a store and if you bought something that was made in Japan, it was probably, you know, poor quality and inexpensive. And what's happened since the 1960s over the last 40 years is they've become the world's best manufacturers of electronics. They've become the world's best designers of televisions and
automobiles.
Oh, well, that's the other thing I was going to say. I mean, look at their auto industry. I mean, arguably, there's nothing manufactured in the United States that really competes on a quality level with what's made in Japan, okay? And so the point I'm trying to make is that they were not content just to be the low labor rate place that made cheap plastic toys. They had a long-term goal, and their long-term goal was to be the best manufacturing country in the world, okay? China has that same goal. The big difference between China and Japan is China is the world's most populous country. They've got 1.3 billion people. This year, Liz, China became the world's second largest new car manufacturer, second only to the United States.
This year?
This year.
And where were they 5 years ago?
They weren't even in the top 10. When you look this year, in 2007, China is going to spend more in research and development than Japan, first time in history. And what that's telling you is, I mean, that's kind of the writing on the wall, what it's telling you is that China does not want to be the $1 a day labor country where everybody just dumps their cheap manufacturing projects and exploits their workers. What they really want to do is they want to be industrialized like Japan. They want to have a high standard of living for their whole country, and they're not going to have a high standard of living unless they have high labor rates.
Well, can we also talk a little bit, Jim, about the extraordinary impact that China is having in the political world of influencing the United States? China is going out and cultivating relationships with Iran and cultivating relationships with Venezuela and cultivating relationships with countries on the continent of Africa and healthy relationships, because that's where the oil is.
That's exactly right, Liz. I mean, in fact, that's what I was about to say about Iran when you mentioned that. They're not doing it because they like the extremists in Iran. They're not saying that they necessarily like the government, but what they do like is they like to have access to energy, because without oil and gas, because see, China has very little in the way of oil and gas reserves. They have to import virtually all the oil that they use in their country.
They're kind of like Hawaii.
Exactly. Now, what they do have in China, and it's one of the big air pollution problems that they have, is they have all kinds of coal, but it's a low-quality coal, and it creates a lot of pollution when it's burned. And that's why their cities have so much haze over them. Even Beijing, their capital, they heat their homes with coal. They cook their food with coal. And it's one that creates just tremendous pollution. And so that's why you see them going into Western Africa. That's why you see them going into Iran. That's why you see going speaking with Chavez in Venezuela, because they're trying to secure, and not just those countries. Maybe you remember about 3 years ago they tried to buy Unocal, and they
right.
were the high bidder, but
right.
Congress stopped it.
Right, right.
They've gone into Canada, and they bought huge reserves in Western Canada. And so, you know, it's not a situation like it once was where we called the shots economically or politically.
But not only are we not able to call the shots, Jim, but we're engaging in behavior that may keep us from what this country needs oil-wise. How do you, if you've got someone like China out there that is capable of cutting a deal with somebody that at least the administration doesn't like, then why wouldn't we change our behavior to cultivate relationships with a Hugo Chavez?
I mean, here's the thing. The Chinese, if nothing else, are extremely practical people as a government. And so, you know, they realize that you're not going to be able to buy somebody's oil if you're not willing to talk to them.
Fact. I mean, that's, but
Chavez
that's,
or
but wait a minute.
About Jimajad that in Iran,
but you don't
exactly
have to.
How he pronounces it,
but that is not, that's not rocket science. You know, you learn that on the grade school playground. You have to be able to talk to people, and given what this country's where we are in our needs, this is the last time that this is the worst point in time that we would say, "Why am I talking to you?" Given the fact that we need oil so badly.
Not just that, we also live in a very dangerous world, and I think it's made less dangerous if you just sit down and talk with people. And you may not agree with everything they believe, and you may not understand everything they understand the way they understand it, but that doesn't mean you can't sit down and have a dialogue.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Barbara, you have a question for my guest, Jim Trippon. He's the editor of China Stock Digest.
Yes, good morning, Liz, and good morning, Mr. Trippop. I was calling because China is, its economy is behind a lot of the problems that are happening in Darfur, and I was wondering, what would you think about African-Americans or minorities not supporting Walmart and China's good when China is opposed to the African continent or looting it? Thank you.
Great question. You know, one of the issues that people have with China, and it's not a simple problem to solve, is China doesn't have the world's best record on human rights in their own country or around the world. I think China, what they're looking to do is, when we're speaking in respect to Africa, is they're trying to get in there and get natural resources because they need them to fuel their economy. And, you know, if you can't get the Chinese government to voluntarily do things, I think you have to use some of the world bodies, whether it be, you know, the UN, whether it be pressure from governments that do care. And also, certainly you can use the economic approach of boycott. But I don't know that, you know, boycott, certainly they can have an impact, but you'd have to build a lot of momentum to it before people would wake up and notice.
But the challenge to all of us is understanding clearly the international history of the world. China has some very, very, very good relationships with some countries in Africa, Ghana being one, where there is a long history of partnership and money coming into Africa that is being used for good things. The United States has some really bad relationships with going into countries and allowing American corporations go to Nigeria, where ExxonMobil is, and the people are dying from the pollution that ExxonMobil is allowing to happen in their pursuit of the oil. So there aren't any clean hands in this in terms of the exploitive nature of a lot of people with power.
That's exactly right. And, you know, traditionally the United States has because we've been the world economic superpower and the world military superpower, you know, we've pretty much done what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, just like the kids on the playground, when a new kid comes in town and they're bigger than you are and stronger than you are, you better learn how to get along with them.
And they have more friends than you have.
You got it.
They have far more friends than you have.
So it doesn't help you to just stand in the corner of the playground and say, I'm not talking to them.
I'm not talking to you. And go get them. Go get them. That's crazy talk. That is absolutely crazy talk. 1-877-920-WGNU. I'm talking this hour to Jim Trippon. He's the editor with China Stock Digest. Does this sell-off provide any opportunities for people that are investing in the market?
Absolutely it does, yeah. And in fact, you know, what we see at the China Stock Digest is that China will have the world's largest economy in 10 years. And most Americans don't really have China on their radar as far as their financial lives. They have it certainly on their radar with regard to what they may buy at Walmart or Kmart or Target or whatever place they happen to shop. But they don't have it in the other side of it in their mind about how you get a profit from it.
And that's
what we focus on.
Well, stay with us. We have to take a break. I'm talking to Jim Trippon. He's the editor with China Stock Digest, joining us from Houston. My name is Liz Brown. We're talking about that big China stock market sell-off last week and its impact on us. I'll be back. Place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Hello, this is Ella Allen Coyne, host of the Gospel Soul Train broadcast. Join me every Saturday evening at 6:30 as we lift up Jesus with the best gospel music in St. Louis. We also bring you the latest church news you need to know. So join me, Ella Allen Coyne, on the Gospel Soul Train Saturday evening at 6:30 here on WGNU.
Do you feel confident about your money? If you're not sure, then join me, David Gaines, each Thursday morning from 11 to noon as we discuss the issues that affect your money on It's Your Money, presented by Heartland Bank. We'll have insightful guests discussing the topics that affect your money. That's Thursday mornings from 11 to noon for It's Your Money on 920 WGNU.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member NASD SIPC. David Gaines, representative. Heartland Bank and Securities America are unaffiliated. Securities have no bank guarantees and are not FDIC insured and may lose value.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. The number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. My conversation this hour is with Jim Trippon. He is the editor of China Stock Digest, joining us from Houston. And we're talking about, Jim, the opportunities that may exist as a result of this China stock market sell-off?
Absolutely. Well, there's several, obviously. One would be for somebody who's a little bit more of a sophisticated investor. to look at some of the Chinese companies that trade in the U.S. markets, because some of them are really selling at tremendous bargain prices. And that's, those are the things that we cover in the China Stock Digest. Now, if you're not that aggressive, another way you can just take advantage of it would be to look at what's available in the United States in terms of your own retirement plans, your 401k plans, your IRA plans, because a lot of the American stocks, since they fell with the Chinese stocks over the last week, are much better priced today than they were a week ago. And so that's an opportunity as well.
And in terms of deciding, figuring out what type of companies that you should be looking at, the Chinese companies, what do you look for? What are the things that you look at?
Well, when we look at companies, and let me give you just kind of a big picture first, China has a lot of companies that are publicly traded, but of all the companies of China that trade publicly, only about 295 of them trade on the U.S. markets, meaning that you can use your regular investment account, your regular brokerage account, and buy any one of these 295 companies right here in the United States because they trade right on the New York Stock Exchange. And so we look at those 295 companies and we say, okay, which of these companies is the best managed? Which of these companies has the best profits? Which of these companies is positioned for the best growth? They're dominant in their industry. They're going to not have to worry too much about their competitors. And those are the kind of companies that we want to buy for the China Stock Digest, and that's what we do, is we evaluate those companies. Now, the way we do it is that we have an office in Shanghai, China. We also have an office in Hong Kong, China. And I actually have a local team in both cities that go out and actually look at these companies. They go out and look to see what are the people buying in the stores. They go out to look to see where is business trends moving to. And that's how we decide which of those companies that we want to recommend for our readers.
Now, 295 companies, what do they look like? Are they the types of companies that people would be familiar with?
Well, probably not recognize the names unless they've spent some time in Asia. But to give you some ideas of the types of companies that trade on the exchanges, the largest life insurance company for the country of China, it's called China Life. That trades right here on the New York Stock Exchange. And so the whole idea behind that as a possible investment is it's the largest life insurance company in the country with the most number of people in it. Well,
do the math.
Do the math, right. Also on the stock exchange, the two gasoline companies that sell gasoline in China, Sinopec and PetroChina, those are both gasoline companies. And if you go and take a trip to Beijing, and I hope you get to go someday and see the Forbidden City and see the Great Wall that's right there by Beijing, but if you go there, one thing you'll notice with all the cars on the streets is there's only two brands of gasoline. There's Sinopec and PetroChina. Well, if there was only two brands of gasoline in the United States, if you bought both stocks, every time somebody fills up somewhere in the country, guess what? They're paying you.
There's only two brands of gasoline.
Yeah, now that's going to change over time. But, I mean, that's the way it is now if you go to Beijing. So those companies are companies that trade here. They have companies that produce steel and aluminum and other, you know, products. They trade on the U.S. markets. They have telephone companies. In fact, there are more people every year that get new cell phones in China than we have total cell phone users in the United States. I mean, and it makes sense because, you know, look at the size of the populations. They're four times our size. But the thing of it is, you know, they're cell phone companies. They trade on the stock exchange, and they're very profitable. So there's just a whole range of industries, whether it be transportation, their airlines, their railroad companies, whether it be their energy companies, both the companies that sell the gas as well as the Chinese National Offshore Oil Company, which is the company that's going to Chavez and that's going to Iran and that's going to Africa, whether it be their steel producers, their aluminum producers, whether it be their telephone companies. All of these companies are companies that trade in the U.S. markets, and they're part of the population of the companies that we follow.
And when the average American out here that does a little dabbling in the stock market, you know they're going to feel a little daunted about, okay, it's hard enough for me to figure out what American stocks to buy, let alone what stocks to buy in China.
Exactly. And that's why we created there's two reasons I created the China Stock Digest. That was one of the reasons. The other one was my main business is not writing newsletters. My main business is running investment portfolios for some of the wealthiest families in the United States. And one of the things we noticed years ago was China was the up-and-comer. It was going to be the big economic story of the next 200 years is going to be China. And so we wanted to start investing in China, but what we found out was that all the news stories that come out of China, the journalists, they all have to have government permits. And if they say something about a company or if they say something about the government that the government doesn't like, guess what? They're out of a job or worse. So what we decided we had to do was create offices and build our own local team so we could really figure out what was going on. And so we do the heavy lifting for our readers. It takes about 15 minutes a month. And if you have 15 minutes a month, you can understand who the winners and losers are in China and where the country is going, because we do a complete macroeconomic study on a monthly basis, and we do updates on every company that's in the trades in the U.S. on a monthly basis.
So what are some of the trends that you see coming out of China?
Well, I mean, one of them we've talked about a little bit earlier in the show, and that is, since China is now one of the biggest producers of automobiles, and I would say what you're going to see, Liz, is in probably another 15 years, China will be the world's largest new car market because they've added 50 million people to their middle class in the last 10 years.
How many have we added?
Yeah, I don't think probably very many. We've lost in debt in our middle class. So my point is simply that, okay, another 15 years down the road when they have 100 million, 200 million, 300 million people in their middle class and those people can all buy cars, guess what? They're going to be using gasoline. So, you know, one long-term trend is that we're going to see gasoline prices here in the United States continue to rise. Now, there may be, you know, times when the markets shift and they'll go down a little bit, but we're going to see high oil prices. They're here to stay in the United States, and they're going to get higher. So that's one trend you can play by investing in China, or you could play by investing here.
And what about health care? Is it run the same way that it's run here?
Well, that's in transition in China. You know, at one time, there was some government payment for health care, and there still is some government payment for health care in China, but it's really in transition right now to almost a free market type system. And that is an issue in China because, of course, a lot of the people in China, particularly in the western part of the country, aren't that wealthy. And so they use traditional Chinese medicine, and they may not have access to MRIs and, you know, some of the advanced
and their illnesses cannot be like our illnesses, because a lot of our illnesses are due to our sedentary life experience and what we do and what we eat, the horrible things that we eat and the horrible ways that we have with exercise. So they're going to have different kinds of illnesses than we have.
Well, that's true. And in fact, you know, one of the funny things that you notice when you just look around the world is, you know, for a country that's as wealthy as we are, it's amazing that we're sicker than most of the rest of the world. I mean,
and we can't afford to get better.
No, we can't. I mean, whereas, and you look at other countries around the world that have, you know, one tenth of the per capita income we have, they live longer than we do. Well, how does that happen?
Yeah,
it's because they're not sitting home, you know, eating the kind of foods we eat.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of the opportunities that lie in investments in China. I think that is really something that people really need to start to wrap their heads around.
That's right. And so, you know, we have resources for people to do that, but I mean, people just need to pay attention to the world around them. And when you ignore the world around them, you end up like, you know, we've ended up with Chavez, and we've ended up with Iran, and we've ended up with a lot of the countries around the world where you're not in the middle of what's going on. You're watching it from the outside, and that's not where you want to be.
And you know, and good for Hugo Chavez to be able to take his oil money and do for his country, because that's what you're supposed to be doing.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole idea of having resources, is to use them for your benefit. I mean, the argument some people have with Chavez is they're wondering, is he really using it for his country, or is he using it more for himself?
Yeah, and then you hear the other side of it is that, yeah, he is. There are all kinds of people that are benefiting from his decision-making. But the bottom line is that he was elected. And
he was reelected
very well. So,
right.
You know, so that's their country. It's like, that's your family. They're allowed to do with their family what they want to do with their family.
That's right. That's none of our business how they manage their business.
So, what do you see happening, Jim, in the future here?
Well, I think the trend is pretty well established right now, and I don't see anything that's going to change it. The trend is that China will have the world's largest economy. We're going to move from first place down to second place. And the other trend is that I think we're going to continue to see a shifting of wealth in the United States. You're going to see, instead of having a little people at the top and a little bit of people on the bottom and a whole bunch of people in the middle, you're going to see people pushed to one side or the other. So some people that are middle class are going to become real rich, and most people that are middle class are going to get a lot poorer in comparison with where they are today. And if you look, you know, today, you know, the real situation in American families are, you know, you need two people to work in many, many families just to pay the bills.
Yes.
It wasn't that way 30 years ago.
And then not only do you need two people to work to pay the bills, if neither one of them has a type of job that has health care, then their bills are going to be something that has never been seen before.
That's right, and that's where you see people, you know, we have record bankruptcies, we have record credit card problems, and that's, I think, a sign of things in the future, unless we either change some of our national policies, or if, as we as individuals, take charge for our situation and say, okay, if I can't change this trend, if the country is not going to change the environment, what can I do to make sure that my family is okay?
And, Jim, where can people find the China Stock Digest?
We're on the Internet. They can just come to ChinaStockDigest.com, and we give a free preview issue to any of your listeners who'd like to learn more about us.
Jim Tripon, thank you so much for joining me on the wake-up call this morning.
My pleasure, Liz. It was great to be here.
Take care. Listen, folks, I'm Liz Brown. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening, and stay strong.
You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us,